Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Watch y'all to know something in case you didn't already. We are just getting started! I can hear you! Lose your head! I don't know if you're jumping in now. This song is about... I don't know if I should say this tonight, because I know we got law officers here, and I'm packing a gun tonight. I'm packing my pistol. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Pittsburgh? Talking about my six shooter of sex. Talking about my Uzi of ooze. You know what it all comes down to? I'm talking about my lip gun!
So here's a little something just for you, Portland, Oregon.
Why, hello, it is 29 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of February, the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's Thursday, and welcome to day 12. It is February 3rd, 2011.
I just have one question.
Yes.
Where are your bitches at?
Really, Dawn, that is a question that haunts me and plagues me every day of my life. Every day as my feet hit the floor and I walk out the front door of my home to another glorious day of existence on planet Earth, I ask myself, where indeed are my bitches? Where my bitches? If I could say that in Latin, it would sound ever so much more profound. All right, well, in any event, it is the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. I thought you were going to ask me what kind of pistol I was packing today.
I was just sitting there actually thinking how it's one of the inequities of being a woman is that I can never, I can never state definitively that I am packing my love gun.
No, you just have a love holster.
I have nothing equivalent. As a woman, you can't get up on stage and go, "Hey, Cleveland, I got boobies."
No, see, you could, though. See, that's the thing. That's what you don't understand. There's certain entertainers who made an entire career out of that. So I'm just, I mean, really.
I just don't feel confident in anything that I have that I could equate it with any kind of a weapon, for example.
Well, see, you know, that's true. I mean, you can't have boobies in an aggressive way.
No, that's the thing.
I mean, unless you're like Chesty LaRue. What was that chick's name? Was that the stripper?
That
had the huge triple Q breasts or whatever.
Oh God, I'm trying to, the one in San Francisco with the billboard.
Strangely enough, Tim Riley would know.
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
But there was Chesty Morgan.
Chesty Morgan,
Chesty
and there's
Morgan.
Kitten Natividad of the Corman movies.
And also, let's not forget Tora Satana of the Russ Meyer film.
Yes, Yeah, Kid Natividad was a Russ Meyer girl as well.
So. Yeah. You know, they got that. That's when I knew that I was. That's what I knew when I was in my place and these were my people. When I moved to Portland and I went to. I don't know, it was like the first month I was here and I went to Mike Clark's Movie Madness and there was a whole Russ Meyer shelf. The top shelf, of course. And it was like. And it just stretched on like for infinity and I thought, this is a good place to live.
Yeah, I think I've told you this before. My first time I went to Movie Madness and I saw all of the movies and I thought, oh my God, I might be able to find like a movie that I've been looking for like forever and haven't been able to find. And I walked up to the fella, who of course it turns out is Mike Clark himself, and I said, very politely, I said, do you have Phase 4? And he just looked at me and he said, of course.
Who do you think I am?
And I just felt so small.
Did he spit at your shoes and walk away?
Practicing like, he just looked at me like, idiot.
Madame, you sicken me. Here's the thing about Paul Stanley is that as I was playing that, it was this great thing just now where, like, I don't know, 4 minutes ago, I start just the very beginning, where's the little,
how are we doing so far?
And it was like, you just look up with that one arched eyebrow at me. Just sort of like a, really? Is it that kind of a day? Okay. And then you go back to typing. And it just becomes more and more absurd, like, the longer he talks, but in a great sort of life-affirming way. I mean, it would be great to just have no shame, and I have very little shame. Most of my shame was just surgically extracted when I was a child. But I think he has like an inverse shame going on. It's like it's physically incapable of Paul Stanley to feel like awkward or embarrassed by anything he does.
Well, yeah, it's like watching Steven Tyler on like American Idol and realizing he's like that all the time.
Yeah, that's
and just like to live your life like that, where you just like sort of walk into the room and go. Yeah. Is there any coffee?
Yeah.
And then you're just like that all the time.
Was it Jay Moore that did that sketch about the rock star real estate sales guy? But it was like 80s rock guy who was now turned into a realtor. And it was all like, it's got two bedrooms and a bath. It was everything he would, you know. You know, and the guy would say, what is this called? I have a fixed-rate adjustable mortgage! it was a gag that got old really quickly, but that really was genius for, like, the first 2 or 3 minutes of the sketch. Did you see the thing that they made, the whole deal with Steven Tyler and American Idol, I guess, last night?
No, I didn't watch it.
See, so. And I don't watch that show, and I mentioned, I think last time we were talking about this, I think it was last week, because last week was when he went to... He said the F a duck thing or whatever. He was like, somebody's name was Chuck or Buck, and he rhymed it with he said something about F a duck and zippity bop bow or whatever.
Yes.
He did something or other. It was insane. But you had that soundbite. It was actually, and I'll have to dig it up. I think I've actually got it. But apparently they either received or are claiming that they received some number of complaints about that. So I don't know if they're just trying to generate a little...
They bleeped it.
Well, but, you know, you don't have to clarify to me. I mean, not like I was offended. But it's not like, I mean, so either they did receive actual complaints about it, because that is, as we know, you know, a family-targeted show, which is one of the reasons why they sacked Paula Abdul, or they're just fabricating it for the sake of controversy. But they actually, they had an on-screen apology before the show, and they said, America, this is why it seems like it was probably a thing that was a little bit of a setup, because it was the actual verbiage of it. See, now I don't even know. What's the wrong way to pronounce that word?
Verbiage.
To leave out the
I. Wrong way. It would be verbiage.
Okay, so I was trying to pronounce it wrong just now, but I couldn't do it. Okay. But it was the actual phrasing of it that made it seem like it might be a little bit of a hype. It was just the black screen and then a white lettering. It said, American Idol would like to apologize. I swear to God, this is what it says. American Idol would like to apologize for Steven Tyler's outrageous behavior last week. And it was terming it outrageous behavior that sort of telegraphs the fact that it was just, you know, they were just trying to get their hype on little bit there. So, anyway, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. If you would like to be part of today's conversation about, you know, whatever, it's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. It is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached at Don, D-A-W-N. At rickemerson.com. Let's see. You get the text box running. You get the Skype. If you want to do that, that is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. Rick Emerson Show via Skype. Monkey Watch coming up today. Penis Watch coming up today. Corpse Watch coming up today.
If we can fit it in, a Hick Watch. In fact, I am definitely doing the Hick Watch because it's from Portland.
Really?
It's a local Hick.
Fantastic. Hey, so the, it's just escaped me now. Wait, the Corpse Watch. Is the Corpse Watch from Oregon as well? Do we have a Corpse Watch today? And is it from Oregon? Because if not, I've got one to add to the pile.
Okay, yeah, no, this one is not from Oregon. So.
Oh, my God. Okay, so there was one that got sent to me last night by an eagle-eyed listener spotted and sent my way. And it actually is an Oregon Corpse Watch. It's more of a follow-up to a previous Corpse Watch that generated quite a lot of discussion. So we'll get to that. Ms. Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, Oregonian columnist Anna Griffin, now with her not twice, but thrice weekly column in the Oregonian. She will be joining us later on today. We'll also
She'll be writing the whole paper. All by herself anytime soon.
Somebody asked her.
For no more money.
Somebody asked her what was after three columns a week, and she said, divorce. I'm glad that we kind of got our hooks into her early before they gave her the third column a week, because that's a thing that writing a column is, you know, people look at a column and it seems like a short, not a blurb, but I mean, it seems. You know, it's not like you're writing a novel or something. And so people, I think that it doesn't take all that long to write. But, I mean, it really does. I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
It is just
well, because what she writes in particular, too, she writes the equivalent of a feature story. It's just, you know, it's just written in a casual way. And she's allowed to opine a little bit more in the way she writes what she writes. She's allowed to actually have a position on it. It's not just dry news reportage. But the thing is, she still has to do interviews. She still has to do research. She still, you know, has to do the footwork behind what she's writing.
And as dumb as it sounds, the reason I think a lot of people don't view it as being a feature piece is because it is orientated vertically, not horizontally. Because it's almost like a sidebar where it goes down, like, you know, because that's how Marky Boulay's thing used to be, and that's how, like, the joke thing, the edge thing. And I think you look at that, and it actually seems like you're doing a lot less writing than if it were a big block of text.
Well, and then some columns are nothing but opinion. And so, what she's doing is actually, she does that sort of, you know, yeah, it's local reporting, but it's
she's
also
kind of
a common.
An angry Charles Kuralt.
A little bit, yeah, I like that.
We should refer to her as that from now on.
The angry Portland-based Charles Kuralt.
Also a woman.
Also a woman.
Also, presumably not with a secret family in Montana.
Probably
I mean,
not.
Not that I know
her,
of.
Her voice is a little higher, too.
Later on the day, we'll also have clue number four for the EH Vending Name That Snack contest. Find out more about EH Vending by going to ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com, or as Don Taylor would say, ehvending.com. Oh, also, by the way.
What is wrong with saying .com?
Nothing's wrong with. Okay, did Rick Emerson say there was anything wrong with it?
It just keeps coming up that you think that there's something strange about the way I say .com instead of .com.
Okay, first of all, it keeps coming up because you keep doing it, and also, but there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just pointing it out. Also, it's not that there's anything wrong with it, but there is something unusual about it. You do have that's just a fact. You have unusual pronunciations of certain things. There's just no getting around it. You have a strange way of accenting certain words and phrases. It's not a knock. It's not that you don't have to take it.
That something I do is strange, it sounds a little bit like a knock.
Well, strange in that it's not conventional. It's not the standard. It's not the norm. But that's okay.
I need to spend more time, I think, listening to people say .com so that I can hear how they do it.
That's okay. I'm the only person that says YouTube. So, I mean, you know, it's just, it's a little bit of personality color, Don. That's all it is. Mm. It's texture, baby. Before we do anything else, let me make sure that I've got this. So we got Monkey Watch, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Anna Griffin for the Oregonian. Clue number four coming up. You are tracking the following headlines for the good people.
I have a trio of animal stories later in the hour. We got a bear attack, we got a snake attack, and we have a rescued horse.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So we got all that coming up, and are we done? Yes, I think so. Okay, guess what I've got? Guess what I'm holding in my right hand right now, Don?
Oh, no. Okay, it's not that.
No, it's not
it's
that.
It's not your love gun.
No, it's not my 6 inches of steel.
I bet I know. It's the clickable Sharpie.
It is the clickable, but it's not just the clickable Sharpie. Well, you've used the clickable Sharpie
right,
already,
the one
right?
I've used the clickable Sharpie that's the fine point marker.
The regular actual
right.
Sharpie, it's just clickable. Okay, here's what I'm holding. It is the Sharpie pen, by the way, right there. Sharpie pen.
Give me. All right.
It's the Sharpie
Ooh,
pen.
It is different.
So that is a
Now, it's nice.
I'm not saying it's going to replace your regular pan, but you had not used it. We were talking about it yesterday with Kelly Clark, and it wasn't a thing. Now, Lara got me that as part of my... That was the third package. The first package that she got me for Christmas was... It was the OCD kit with all of the legal pads, and then she got me two boxes of the Pilot pens. Then the third box was a variety of new pens that I had not tried but might enjoy using.
Yeah, this is very, very similar to the extra fine point clickable Sharpie, but it is just a little bit finer. The point is just a tad finer.
And also it doesn't bleed through the paper because it's not actually a marker. It is, in fact, I think it's an ink pen. And at least when I used it, I didn't have that problem. It wasn't like it was a...
Yeah, it is a regular ink pen. It does smear. It's not permanent.
Yeah. So anyway, you can feel free to use that if you want. Because I got two of them.
Oh, well, thank you.
I mean, if you feel like you're going to use it.
I actually have my favorite pen here today. I was panicking for a couple of days because I kept coming to work without the kind of pen I like. And you know how neurotic.
Oh, yes.
One gets when you have the wrong pen. And it wasn't bad enough to, like, you know, just spiral my whole life out of control or anything, but it was just irritating. And I'd come to work every day going, I don't have the right pen. And so today I came to work and I was like, God damn it, did I remember to pick up the pen? And like, I don't know. And then I was digging through stuff. I swear to God, I was here digging through stuff before the show, and it was like, McRib is back. I pulled it out and I was like, oh, good.
Was it at the bottom of your
bag?
My
pen, yes.
Yes.
You know, and I have like two or three of them at home, but it's like we've reached that point where I've become so dependent on using the Uniball Signo that I'm going to just need to buy a box of them so that I have
a bunch of them at all times. So do you only at one...
I have three of them.
At any given point, you have three, or right now you have three.
Yeah, I think the last time I bought the box that had like three or four, the hang card that had three or four.
Oh, no. I do everything but have like the little, you know, it's like when you get to the end of your planner for the year, you head to September or something, and there's that little note they stick in, like, time to reorder your planner pages. Or as you're nearing, what is it? What's the thing they do with the medication? Like with, I think birth control, they do that sometimes, where it's like you get to the end of the whatever, and it's like the pills are a different color or something.
Yeah.
And so you know to reorder. So I don't quite do that with the pens, but I do keep them all within sight. When I get my box of Pilot pens, I don't leave them in the box. They actually go into a special container that sits to my immediate right when I'm in my home office so that I can see where the ink supply is at, or the pen supply is at. And then, so you'll see here if I open my bag right there.
Ah, yes.
You'll note that I carry with me at all times, counting the one that I'm using right now, because that's a different one that goes in my... I have one that goes in my planner, but I can't use that one for the show. That's for the planner only. I actually have four Pilot pens and two clickable Sharpies with me at all times right there. So
I have three pens in my bag, and two of them are merely acceptable, and one of them is the kind that I actually like prefer to use.
So. There'll be days where it's like I would, before I started carrying extra pens with me, I would come to work and I wouldn't be able to find, or the Pilot pen would run out. That's the worst thing. It starts to run out and you get that horrible skippiness, you know, and scratchiness going on, and you're just trying to get it to work, and it's just, and you're like, come on, you're kind of like shaking the pen back and forth, and all that, all you succeed in doing that is just getting ink on your hand.
We have to stop talking about pens.
Why?
Because we will just keep talking about office supplies for like an hour.
Have we talked
you
about
know
that?
We will.
Have we talked about that website that is Pen Island, but it's really Penis Land?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure.
But we also talked one time that we should just have like one show a month where we do nothing but talk about office supplies just to get it out of our system.
Just pen talk?
Pens and notepads
pen
and
watch.
Planners and yes.
You could probably do, I mean, we could do like a once a month hour long show that was just like, you know, like a sort of office supplies and office accessories program.
Yeah, I mean, we could
get somebody from Office Depot
yeah,
on.
Get a guy from Staples
give
in
us free
to talk
stuff.
To us about stuff. Yes.
Hey, that's a great idea, actually. We could do like a, what do they call that? What do the kids now call it? A vlog. We could do one of those, like a little video component to it where we actually show how the pens write. We show the sort of ink, you know, the kind of you know, ink trail it leaves on the paper, whether or not it smears.
You know, like the... like the organizer expo they just had, there has got to be some kind of a convention for office supply stuff and pens and things. We need to find if there's one of those here in Portland.
If not,
at
we
all.
Should start it.
And we'd go.
If not, we can spearhead that. We can begin that movement. This is all true. All right, so we've got all that stuff coming up.
And I have an email I have to read at some point because it's useful and helpful and does a service.
You should do that now, Don.
Okay. I have an email here from listener Dallas Neighbors who wrote that, Don, On February 12th, I'm doing something incredibly stupid for an incredibly good cause. I am taking the polar plunge for the Special Olympics of Oregon. That means I will be diving in frozen water in the middle of February. What I'm doing is finding people who are willing to donate money to the Special Olympics as sponsors. Says he's not asking me particularly to donate to him, which is good because I have no money. But what he would like is for me to mention that he's doing this. If more people know about the plunge, then perhaps they would like to support him in his efforts to not die jumping into frozen water to earn money for the Special Olympics. So you can find him. You can search for Dallas Takes the Polar Plunge. He's Dallas as in Texas, D-A-L-L-A-S. Dallas Takes the Polar Plunge on Facebook, and that will have a link to his donation page. And you can support one of our fine listeners, a member of the Rick Emerson family, as he foolishly dives into icy cold water to earn money for the Special Olympics.
Now, what is the deal? Because this is a thing that I think they not that I'm trying to, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for a guy who's doing this because it's a thing that I... They threatened me with this twice when I was at CBS, that they were going to make me do the polar plunge thing. And I think I bought my way out of it by just writing them a check. I think I just said, like, how much do I have to donate to the Special Olympics for you to not make me do this? And they said, like, however much. And I was like, done. And I just, and then they left me alone for another year. Is the thing that he actually is going to jump into what body of water?
Well, if he's, I believe he's here in Oregon.
It's not the Willamette, is it?
Well, I'm looking it up right now. Yes.
Seems like that's more of a poo plunge.
Well, nearly 3,500 people do it in Bend, Portland, Medford, Eugene, and Corvallis. And yeah, it's, I'm trying to think, I'm not sure what the rules are or whatever, but they have to sign a waiver. If I die, it's not my problem.
So they actually do jump in. It's not like if they get a finite amount of a specific number of donations or whatever, then they get to avoid jumping in. They are going to be jumping in
regardless. In fact, they have to raise a minimum of $50 to take part.
Okay, all right.
They can't wear a wetsuit, you know, a dry or a wetsuit, so you're not allowed to wear anything that will help keep you warm.
Of course not.
I guess that's the thing. People give you money for the Special Olympics, and in return, you jump into the icy water and take your life in your hands.
Seems like someone has to be a little bit special themselves to do that, but, you know.
I think it's fitting that this benefits the Special Olympics.
Being a good person, I suppose. I think Court and Bobby may have done that a couple years ago, but I am not entirely sure about that. They may also have just coughed up enough money to buy their way out of it. What is the website if people want to know more about this?
He can search for Dallas himself. You can find out all about this at soor.org/plunge, or basically, which is the Special Olympics website. But if you want to help out our listener Dallas, search for Dallas Takes the Polar Plunge on Facebook.
Awesome.
And we could probably figure out a way to put a link to that on our blog.
I think we may have the science.
I think we might be able to do that.
We may have the technology necessary to do that. Somebody notes that everything fun always begins with someone saying, we need you to sign this waiver. That is true. That is true. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program still to come. We get your Corpse Watch, Penis Watch, Monkey Watch, maybe a top five that I mentioned this. We had listener Jerry submit a top five. And for no readily apparent reason, like it just arrived in the inbox, I don't know, last night, this morning. And it was his top five makeout songs from high school. And so
Jerry's feeling nostalgic, just wanted to share.
I'm suspecting there may be a reunion of some kind coming up, because looking at the songs, there's not a total overlap, but I would say that there is a demonstrable overlap, there's a sizable overlap with, maybe not makeout songs as such, but songs that I remember being played at like an eighth grade dance or a high school dance or something. So I would imagine he and I are around the same age. So this is what, 2011? I guess it doesn't really matter because I don't know when he graduated, but it seems like, and we're in, what, February now? Mm-hmm. So we're just, and reunions typically happen kind of
like
June.
Like the spring, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, April, May, June, something like that. Speaking of which, I think I have, do I have a goddamn reunion of some kind coming up this year?
Well, when did you graduate from
1991.
High school?
20 year?
That would be this year.
Well, that's another thing I don't get to go to. So there you go. So you can check it off the list of things I won't be attending. I think other people have this sort of like, ooh, my 5 year's coming up, my 10 year. And I have just the whole like, I cross them off the things that I don't go to. Ooh, I've missed my 5 year. Ooh, I won't be going to the 10. Ooh, going to skip the 20 as well.
I went to my 10, and it reminded me why I didn't actually maintain friendships with anyone from high school. And also, it was also an opportunity to sit in a hotel room at one point doing drugs with a selection of people that I knew, but we would not all have ever hung out at the same time. You know, in high school.
Drugs were the glue.
But 10 years after the fact, we're all happy to like drink scotch and do a couple of lines in a hotel room together. Although, you know, we wouldn't have been caught dead in public together, you know, when we were actually in high school.
It's good that you could find something to agree on. That's something being cocaine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one needs a social bonding agent every now and again.
Yeah.
I think it was when Sarah had her 10-year anniversary or something that came up. Because she is, she's basically a senior citizen at this point. I think it was her 10-year anniversary where we came very close to hiring somebody else to go back to pretend to be her.
I remember that.
Just to see if anybody would notice or if they would just sort of, if they would play along. Anyway, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. I guess this is where I would typically talk about what I did last night, but what I did last night was really, really dull. I had nothing of any demonstrable amusement happen to me. I basically just folded more socks. So, Dawn Taylor?
Well, I have two interesting things that I've noticed recently of my interactions with my dog. One is...
You can hear people listening more closely right now.
What? Oh, this will be good, they say. One was...
First pens, then dogs. It's the best show ever.
What was it? I started because I've been doing this show with you since June, which means that I have the schedule now where I actually leave the house and am gone for a long period of time. And for a long time, I didn't. I was a freelance writer. I was at home a lot. And so the dog and I spent most of our time together. And now I'm like leaving every day. And she would just stand there and look at me with a sad, sad look on her face. So I felt really bad. So this past week, I started doing this thing where I would go get a dog cookie, a dog biscuit, and I'd put it in my pocket and I'd get all my stuff together. And as I'm walking out the door, I make her sit and then I give her the cookie. And so I figured that now, this is basically to assuage my own guilt.
Is this so that she will associate you leaving with the cookie and therefore be happy about it, or at least less sad?
I just felt bad.
Ooh, leaving time is when I get fed.
She would always just stand there and look at me and put her head down and her ears would go down.
Yeah.
And she'd go, oh, you're going now. So I was like, yes, I'm going. Here, have some food, you know, because, you know, that's... I come from a long line of people with eating disorders. That's what we do. We
bury
our
your
sadness.
Feelings in fat.
But the problem is now, of course, by the second time I did this, the dog immediately made the association.
Right.
Dawn's leaving. I'm going to get a cookie. And so now she's like happy that I'm leaving. Now I go get the cookie. She sees me like packing up my laptop and get my stuff together. And she starts walking around, wagging her tail, her ears go up. So now I feel bad.
She's warming up the car for you.
Yeah, because now I feel like she's pushing me out of the house. Like, are you leaving yet? Are you leaving now? Are you leaving now? Because when you leave, I get a cookie.
Now
are
you know
you leaving
how
now?
Patrick feels on Thursday night.
So that there's that. And then I noticed today there's something I've been doing. I was talking to her, and I look at her, and I go, and she was kind of crowding me a little while I was getting at it. And I said to her, because, you know, we talk to our dogs, and I said to her, yo, back off. You ain't getting it until I leave. And I had no idea why I talked to the dog like that. And then I realized it's because I've been watching The Wire.
I was going to say, when did you turn into a sassy black woman in your interactions with the dog?
I'm turning into someone who lives in Baltimore, apparently, because I've been watching too much Wire. I don't talk this way to anyone else, but I've started talking that way to the dog.
That's awesome.
You ain't getting nothing till I leave.
You heard? That's great. Here's the story that I can tell. This is actually not even my story to tell. This is Cheryl's, but I can... Did you meet Cheryl's mom?
At the Christmas tree thing.
I'm sorry, her mom's, when she was at the Christmas tree thing. So here's, okay, so, you know, there's Cheryl and her mom, and they are, I think they're clearly not from Baltimore, but they're huge Wire fans, and that was one of the things that, Cheryl and I sort of first bonded over at CBS. We're like, The Wire. You watch The Wire. The Wire's great. It's the best show ever. And Cheryl told me the greatest story at one point, because I don't know how they roll in Hawaii, in Beaverton, where she lives now, apparently something that you would occasionally hear emanating from their house is that at slack moments during the evening when they were just like, not even watching TV, they would just sort of be sitting around the house or just, you know, making a pie or whatever it is they do, Cheryl would occasionally just duck into the room and yell, 5-0! And then her mom her mom would respond by going, shut it down! And then
oh, that's awesome.
And then they would go their separate ways. So, which is sort of great. I like to think that maybe that is a common side effect of watching that show, is that the urban patois just creeps into your lexicon.
Yeah, it was startling. It just came out of my mouth, and I stopped for a moment to go, why did I just say that?
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. That's fantastic. Have you started, where are you? Are you watching season two yet?
I just started season two.
Okay.
And it's quite the culture shock because, you know, completely new version of the song and the credits, and he's on a boat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Jimmy. Well, yeah, and if they telegraph so early on, they go, Jimmy, where don't you want to be? He goes, I hate that boat. And so then by the end of, season one or whatever, they stick him in the boat. Yeah, so season two has the Tom Waits version of the song, I believe, Down in the Hole.
Oh, is that who does it?
Well, I think.
I don't think so.
They use the Waits version at one point.
Okay.
Because season one is not Tom Waits. Season five is Steve Earle. Season four is actually because season four takes place in the schools, and so they actually have, I think, some of the kids who play the students are singing it in season four. That leaves season three and two. Yeah, it is, because I think
season two, it says it's Tom Waits, but I didn't.
When you walk through the garden.
I guess it is. I just didn't really realize, it didn't occur to me that it was Tom Waits. I was putting on my makeup, so
no,
the first
it's,
time I heard it.
Yeah, season two is really, really great, and it takes you into a whole different direction because, you know, you're down at the docks, and you think that, suddenly you're like, well, this is a whole totally different program. You know, there's a different cast of characters. What's going on? But the brilliant thing about that is that they take the story, they go down a sort of a different road with it for a while, and then they do what they do so often in the show, and you'll see them do this. It's not even really a formula, but it's just something that they're able to do really well, where the show will take these sort of side roads and end up in some totally other, some totally different part of town in a different storyline. But then they will gradually, of course, sort of pull all the threads together, and you'll see how everything intertwines in a really, really sort of wonderful way. So I am so jealous that you were watching that show for the first time, because it's a thing that like I said yesterday, that I was holding off on ever rewatching that season three Californication finale because I wanted to be able to go back and watch it again sort of fresh because it was so well done. That's the thing with The Wire that I had to force myself to do at one point, was just to quit watching it for a long time so I could go back and enjoy it again. Like I don't think I've watched Arrested Development front to back since it went off the air, because I want to be able to sort of, have some semblance of the spark when I go back to
it. Yeah, I've kind of done the same thing. I haven't watched it all the way through, and every once in a while I'll get an urge to watch Arrested Development. I'll like pop in one episode or something and start to watch it, and then I stop because I don't want to spoil it for myself. I'm keeping this aside for later to go back and watch it sometime in the future.
Is season one of The Wire, and I forget this, is season one of The Wire where I think it's Jimmy and Bunk go to the house and they have the scene that is nothing but the F word?
Yes.
For like 4 minutes.
Which is just brilliant.
And
yeah.
You're just like, that's awesome. It's fantastic. And you get it's no wonder that unlike The Sopranos or Sex and the City or whatever, it's no wonder that show has never been sold into syndication to a regular network, because there's just no way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the amount of editing and censoring you would have to do on that show to make it work on a regular network is just unbelievable. I mean, there's just no way you could ever, there's no amount of dubbing that's going to fix that show.
Well, I'm assuming that's the same problem with The Shield. That's why we haven't seen, The Shield in syndication at
Probably.
All, because just the themes and the situations, can't be scrubbed clean enough for network television.
Final observation, then we'll do a couple stories and we'll take a break. We'll come back with Anna Griffin for The Oregonian. You know, a thing that The Shield did to me, a way that The Shield permanently altered my outlook on the world. Here's something that I can never, ever, ever again look at the same way. And I think about this probably once a week. And I haven't seen this episode for maybe 9 years. And I don't think I ever watched it a second time because it was so unbelievably horrifying. And I'm not talking about the whole David Acevedo and the gun and the hey now. I'm talking about where Mackie gets that guy's face and just shoves it down on the heating, on the element on the stove, on the burner.
Oh, that. Yeah, no, I was thinking about the curb.
Oh, there's the curb, too. And then there's that whole business of beating the guy with the phone book. No, he gets what's-his-name Amadio or whatever his name
yeah.
is. And he just grabs him and he just puts his face down on the stove.
Yeah, on the electric burner
yeah.
on the stove.
And I got to tell you, I watched that once and I think that, by the way, is when Lara quit watching. I think she actually just said, I'm done. And she left.
Yeah, wasn't it like, I think the very first episode of The Shield, wasn't it? Where somebody like had their mouth put on a curb and the back of their head stomped?
Maybe.
And it was like, I almost stopped right there. Just like, holy crap.
What am I watching?
Oh my God.
And little did you know that really does set the tone for that entire program.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Let's do a couple news stories. We'll take a break on the other side. Come back with Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. Look over there, kids. It's... Wait. There
this
we go.
Is Dawn Taylor.
It is, too. A couple in Longwood, Florida said that they were awakened earlier...
Sorry, where?
Florida. Said that they were awakened earlier this week to loud noises and discovered bears attacking their car outside their home. The couple's car was parked outside their home on Wyndham Court, not far from Wakiwa Springs State Park. Kathy Swordlow, one of the a member of the family, said one was standing on top of the car and the other one was by the car like some teenage boys doing a prank. The bears caused significant damage to her 2004 Ford Taurus. It cost $1,500 to repair the roof, she said.
It does make you wonder when she said they're like teenage boys doing a prank, and you think, well, you're just anthropomorphizing the animal. But really, they have no demonstrable gain by destroying the car.
No.
It's not like they're going to get – it's not like it's filled with honey.
No, they're just doing it to do it.
There must just be something that is inherent in life, in mammals, in certain kinds of creatures, where they just like to break stuff into little pieces.
Oh, yeah.
There's just something that's a universal. That's the thing that bonds us all together.
Well, they apparently they had to cut the roof off of the car to repair it, and they had to put a new tire on. So in the tire, you could see their claws. They were trying to use the tire for leverage.
Of course.
The Swordlow said this isn't the first time bears have damaged their property. They've spent hundreds of dollars to repair a fence intended to keep the bears out and to install an alarm to scare the bears away. The bears are such a nuisance in their neighborhood that they have a Facebook group dedicated to them.
Really?
Yes.
That's great. Wonderful.
We have a local Hick Watch.
Here's your local Hick Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. I'm sorry, I don't know why things are my audio, my soundboard is hanging up over here. One second, hold on. Yeah, there we go.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen, the way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your Hick Watch.
A house fire did $30,000 in damage to a northeast Portland home. Fire investigators say people living in the Prescott Street home were using a hole in their floor as an ashtray. The fire was first reported at about 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, and according to Portland Fire and Rescue,
wow.
A 911 caller screamed that the fire department was needed and then hung up.
Oh, my God. Please tell me. Is there audio? Do we have the...
Look for it.
We'll have to look for that. Oh, man.
Officials say the person then refused to give vital information when the dispatcher returned the call several times.
Because that information's hard to get, I would imagine. Like, you know, where are you calling from or who might be in residence at the home?
The first crew showed up less than 5 minutes after getting the call, and firefighters were able to get the fire under control in about 20 minutes. Shortly after the fire was extinguished, investigators said it appeared the tenants had been flicking ashes and cigarettes into a hole in the floor of their home.
Here's the thing is, when you said that there was, you know, they were reporting a fire, and I knew it was a Hick Watch, but I still had no idea exactly what the nature of it was going to be. I don't think I could have guessed. I don't think I could have adequately predicted, because why would that ever occur to you? I mean, because this is the sort of thing that fascinates me more than anything, this kind of story, because it's not like they're entirely dumb. I mean, they get that the cigarettes have got to be put somewhere else, that you can't just put it in your pocket, you know, or that you can't just, you know, that it shouldn't just sit on the counter or in the breakfast nook or, like, you know, in the place where you keep cookies. It's got to go somewhere else and maybe in a receptacle that is like a hole somewhere. But then they immediately go to, how about that hole in the floor? Or was the hole in the floor already there? Did they dig the hole? Did they create the hole just to have a place? That would actually be the best possible version of the story if they had actually dug the hole in the kitchen or wherever just To have a place to put their cigarettes where they were out.
If we had a hole in the floor, they, again, like those the razor blades that go into the slot in the back of the medicine cabinet, they'll just be gone and we won't have to think about them
anymore. That's fantastic.
Public Information Officer Paul Cora said, basically, you know, about the flicking the cigarettes into the hole in the floor. He said, if that's true, it shouldn't be a surprise that there was a fire. That's not careless smoking. That's stupid smoking.
Well done.
He would also he would like to remind smokers to use ashtrays and properly dispose of all smoking materials. Portland Fire and Rescue also wants to remind the community that staying on the line with the 911 dispatcher and answering questions will help first responders understand the situation before they arrive.
And by the way, you know, you got to feel.
So don't just call and yell fire and then hang up.
5-0. The thing is, you got to know too. You got to feel for that guy in a certain way. Well, I mean, on the one hand, it seems like he's probably got job security, like, you know, forever, because there's never gonna be. We're never gonna run out of stupid people, because they just seem to, you know, they just, as John Leguizamo would say, they breed like roaches. But also that even as he is saying that thing about, like, hey, don't just throw your cigarettes, like, into a hole in the floor. And by the way, don't just call and yell fire and then hang up the phone. He knows that his words are going to have no effect. Yeah. He knows that sort of behavior is going to continue. There's nothing he can do about it.
Oh, yes. I have this image in my head of somebody coming to visit these people and saying, you mind if I smoke? And then going, no problem. Just put it out in the smoking hole.
I was going to say smoking hole. So long as you put it out properly, Zeke. And then they just point to some sort of a big gouge in the linoleum.
That has smoke coming out of it.
God
because
damn.
Of all the smoldering cigarettes underneath.
That's wonderful. All right. I wondered how we were. It's not like I questioned that the headquarters was going to be good. I just didn't know. You know, because typically you think of those things as taking place in a certain region of the country, not necessarily in our own backyard.
And yet.
All right, there you go. There's your Hick Watch for, for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Copenhagen makes me feel so good. Copenhagen,
wow.
The way I know it should. Well, I put a little chew in my mouth, go spitting, slobbering all around the house. That Copenhagen makes me feel so good. How about you?
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, I'll tell you what, we'll do a little break here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk to Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. We've also got, Penis Watch coming up, of course. Corpse Watch and Monkey Watch. Plus, we will have clue number 4 for today, for this week's EH Vending, Name That Snack Contest. And we may or may not get to this listener submitted top 5. This is from listener Jerry, submitted the top 5 songs for the making out from his high school years. So that is all on the way. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay right there. We return momentarily. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6969. 864, if you would like to be part of today's program, telephonically speaking, you can also email it to rick at rickemerson.com. It is rick at rickemerson.com, or Dawn Taylor can be reached at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. It is Dawn at rickemerson.com. Joining us in just one moment will be columnist Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. Coming up later on, we get your Monkey Watch, Corpse Watch, Penis Watch, yes?
Penis Watch.
Kick Watch already done. Great. We may or may not have time to do this listener-submitted top five. I'm going to do everything in my power to work it in, though, because it's glorious.
Okay.
And by glorious, I mean awkward. And by awkward, I mean cringe-inducing. And by cringe-inducing, I mean filled with equal parts. What is it that Don Draper says in the that episode of Mad Men where he's doing the thing about the carousel, and he talks about nostalgia being some, I know, it's like the confluence of two Greek words for, like, memory and pain and pleasure and something or other. It's like a series of songs from a certain period in your life where the songs themselves aren't bad, and the period of time isn't bad as such, but it's just something you don't really want to relive. You know, it's not like it was the you were traumatized. It's not like you were in like a labor camp or something. It's just like you don't really want to go back and just experience that moment in your life ever again.
No. When I was in junior high school, which was the worst time of my entire life, they had these noon dances on Friday. The Friday noon dances outside in the courtyard, which of course meant that the popular kids who actually were able to interact with the opposite sex were able to dance with each other, while the rest of us just milled about in phenomenal psychic pain because no one liked us. And which was most of us, you realize later. But, you know, everyone, when you were 12 and 13 years old, you were just so, you know, self-absorbed with your own immense psychic pain. And one of the teachers who ran the noon dances was fixated for some reason on the song Maggie May by Rod Stewart,
yes,
and would play it every single week. And so that song, every time I hear it, it's like I'm just being stabbed in the gut. And all it's like, just all of a sudden, I'm taking it. It's like, Joe Overstreet doesn't love me.
This has been another chapter from Dawn's Traumatic Childhood on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson show from The Oregonian, where she's the author of a now thrice-weekly column on life in Portland and Multnomah County, Ms. Anna Griffin. Hello there. How are you today?
Hello. I'm good. How are you guys? We did not have noon dances in middle school, but I feel that way when I hear Maggie May, too.
You were wild and woolly. Noon dances. It seems like that's a thing that is either really cool or really lame. This is what, junior high?
Yeah, junior high.
So what, like 6th, 7th, 8th grade, something like that?
7th and 8th grade.
So that's either really, really great when you're in seventh grade, or it seems unbelievably dorky. I'm not quite sure which it would have been.
I think it's either really, really great, or it's just incredibly painful.
I don't want to.
Well, I'm talking about the idea that it's at noon.
Yeah.
In other words, the idea that it's happening in the middle of the day.
It was at lunchtime, and we had this. There was this whole outdoor. This was Southern California, so we had a cafeteria, but nobody ate in the cafeteria if you could help it. And we had a whole outside courtyard area that had tables, picnic tables and stuff. And then this sort of raised brick area where the flagpole was. And that was the place where only the eighth graders were allowed to sit. But every Friday, they sort of cleared a bunch of the tables out. And then they played music over the speaker system. And there were these noon dances at lunchtime outside, which were just, you know, you're basically just encouraging a bunch of people who are at the height of their most painful hormonal awkwardness to be painstakingly aware of, like, their awkwardness.
Did people actually dance?
Oh yeah, the cute popular kids would.
Well, I'm confused on something here. So the dance actually happened outside.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm just picturing like a cement courtyard or like a grassy knoll
or
something.
Pretty much, yeah. It was like a.
Well, what kind of dance is outside at noon? Now I realize this is lame. I have no more questions.
They would play the rock and roll music, and then and then kids would dance who, like, actually, you know, had the balls to approach each other.
Did anyone enjoy middle school?
I hope not.
I certainly didn't.
I don't know anyone who did.
It was the most miserable, most torturous 2 years of my life.
And I think even the popular kids, I think if you went back and saw it through their worldview, they were miserable.
No, because that particular age is just unpleasant. Because it's not like high school is really anybody's golden years, not anybody normal. So, I mean, if people look back, the best years of your life when you were in high school, that's like you're dealing with a defective person. So, but that being said, it's not like high school is uniformly unpleasant. I think there's two ways that people either develop. You either when you leave high school and when you become, you know, whatever, 25, 30 or 35 or 40, the further away you get, I think your memory solidifies into one of two recollective paths. That is either A, where high school, you know, those are the glory days, you know, where it's like you were, you know, you were on the varsity team and you had the prettiest looking girl in school and you had yourself a 57 Thunderbird or whatever, and you just, you know, and you were living some sort of all-American James Dean life that doesn't really happen to anybody. Or
that's when you peak.
Yeah,
and then everything after that is just downhill.
That's the thing. Yeah, so either people who view that as like, yeah, that is like the apex, that is the apogee of their existence, or you have people who look back and we'll view it, I think, through an equally false prism, but it's from the opposite end of the spectrum. It's that nothing good ever happened to them in high school, and it was it was constant torture day in and day out, which of course just isn't true. I mean, I would never ever want to repeat high school because the ups. I mean, you know, there are good things that happened to you in high school, even if they're not actually at the school or involved with going to school. Adolescence does have, you know, there are things that happen to you in adolescence that are good, if only because they are mile markers on the road to eventual emancipation and, you know, and adulthood and whatever. But they're just, to me, they were just not not good enough that they were worth like all of the sort of troughs in that cycle.
If that is the best that life gets,
right,
they should just hand you a gun on graduation
day. That's the thing. Yeah. It's like it's not that there's nothing good that happens. It's just that like it's such a mixed bag. It's like, you know what high school is like a bag of Bertie Bott's every flavor beans, but it's equally divided between lollipop and vomit. You know, it's not that there's no lollipop in there. It's just that there's just as much like grass.
If I remember keg parties correctly, sometimes the lollipop leads to vomit.
I will say, though, that I would love just briefly to re-experience that level of excitement from just having someone hold my hand.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. It's there are moments in high school.
I'm being touched.
Where you where someone exhibits something other than revulsion at the idea of physical closeness.
Yes, human contact. Yes.
And you say, oh, we have a relative proximity, and she's not calling for a teacher or throwing up. This is awesome. And it takes so little to make you happy. But then again, by the same token, it takes so little to ruin your entire life.
Yeah.
Because, and I think it was Chuck Klosterman who wrote about this. He said that I think in Fargo Rock City, he talks about the idea that. I think he talked about the difference between being, I think he talked about Motley Crue versus Radiohead in his fandom. And he said he grew up as a heavy metal fan. And he said, you know, there are days now as an adult when I feel that Radiohead is the best band on earth and they're really the best that music has to offer. And he said, but I realize that as much as I love Radiohead, I will never feel as deeply about them as I did about Motley Crue. Because you never feel anything as deeply as you did when you were 15, because so many of those emotions are being used for the first time. It's like they've just been taken out of the box and they've still got peanut wrapping around them or whatever. And you're looking at the owner's manual going, well, how do I use these emotions that I've just been, oh, God, it's a girl, you know, and then, you know, and it's like the girl will look at you and like, maybe you will totally misinterpret a smile, but it doesn't matter because then it's like you are Sinatra at the Sands with the world on a string for the rest of the day. But then it's like if the girl somehow shuns your advances, and maybe like the advances, like the girl might not even have done any of these things. You might be projecting all of this onto a completely like fictitious canvas. But then it just destroys you, and you are just crushed for the remainder. I remember – I will tell you this, actually. This is this one small anecdote that no one cares about. When I was in high school, there was this young lady that I quite fancied. And, you know, and I was just – to no one's surprise, I was just a mess. I mean, just like I was not even put together with spare parts. I mean, I was just put together with like floor sweepings like every bad trait you could possibly have as an adolescent male. I had in spades. I mean, I was just. It really is just. I was like some sort of lab detritus that had gathered at the bottom of a petri dish that somehow sprang into human form. It was really just terrible in every way. My appearance, my mannerisms, my ability to interact with people socially, I had like nothing. But I do remember with crystal clarity the moment that I asked a girl to go to, like, you know, you know, the spring, the spring formal or whatever it was. And I said, like, you know, so do you want, if you're not going with anybody, maybe I could, you know, we could go, like, you know, together, you know, just to, like, maybe just if you would, you know, if you're doing. And she, and I was just stammering my way all the way to the end. And she actually just at one point just said, she said, sure, I'll go. And I felt like, for a moment, I swear to God, I thought I was actually going to pass out. And it was that thing that, like, you hear, you read about in, like, a book, you see it in movies where the guy, you know, where, like, everything goes, like, sort of swimmy for a moment. It's like when you get, like, a flashback sequence in a sitcom and everything goes wavy. There was this moment where, like, I lost the ability to focus on anything. And I did hear, I swear to God, like, a loud sort of, in my ears. And then everything snapped back in. For a moment, I thought I was actually going to lose consciousness and fall over, which I think probably would have undercut any sort of momentary coolness that I had at that.
I'll go to the dance with you. Thump.
Yeah. You know, and it's like then you're having to like find a ruler to put on my mouth so I don't chew my tongue, and then that's just no way to impress
but
anybody.
But you're cuter that way. You're vulnerable.
See, the thing is, maybe you're saying that to be nice, maybe you're not. But even if you mean that's the thing I think that is maybe appreciated when you are older. You know, I think people appreciate maybe, I don't know what that is. I think at least in the teenage years, I don't think vulnerability and awkwardness is an attractive feature.
The sensitive side does not work in your favor until about 35, I think.
And also, I'm not even really sure that it works in your favor then, because I think, and this is just my experience, I think as Julia Duffy said once in an episode of Newhart, she said she was talking to somebody or other, some guest at the inn who had a crush on her, and she said, well, you know, you're not, you know, you're cute. I mean, you're not like Robert Redford cute. You're like Mr. Potato Head cute. And that to me, I remember seeing that episode when I was like 13. And I mean, that this sounds so dumb to say, but that just hit home with me. I thought, oh, my God, I'm Mr. Potato Head cute most of the time. It must now become my goal to become more Robert Redford cute, which really worked out with varying degrees of success. But why are we talking about this? Oh, the top five. And also because this is just the way the show works sometimes. Anna Griffin, columnist from The Oregonian. How are you?
I am good.
So you've moved to 3 columns a week from 2. When did that happen?
The end of the month.
And
just very recently.
So congratulations.
Thanks.
And so are you going to keep it the same tone and subject matter? I say more of the same. I don't mean that in a bad way. But I mean, are you going to be?
Is it going to be more of that pablum? What?
She's going to be padding out the thing you've been doing forever.
More of that thing I don't read.
We're going to get more raccoon suckling stories.
That's the goal, right there. The good stuff. More of the good stuff.
I just know they were going to make it like the Hialeah correspondent or something for the third column.
I don't think we have one of those.
Damn it!
Anymore.
Damn.
Anymore. The old days. The golden days of journalism.
To our shame. but you're going to be taking kind of the tone and the style that you do now and expanding it to 3?
Yes.
And is it on a regular, going to be a regular schedule?
I was Wednesday, Saturday. I'm now Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Excellent.
So don't worry about reading the Weekend Oregonian.
Done and done.
Nothing in there.
Here's a little secret. I'm way ahead of you. All right. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Awesome. What is coming up in the Oregonian in the near future that people should be reading?
Let's see. Tomorrow, I'm writing for tomorrow about a realtor in Newport who is raising a stink because the Association of Realtors wants to charge all 1,400 of their members with a $75 fee to raise money for a ballot campaign. You're bored already, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm actually
to place in Oregon's Constitution a ban on something called a real estate transfer tax, which is essentially a fee charged anytime property changes hands.
All right, now I'm
you're bored
reaching
now,
boredom.
Yeah.
I see the off ramp to bored city.
Yeah, it's about a crusty realtor who's fighting the system.
Really? Now, is he in fact crusty but benign?
He describes himself as irascible and unpleasantly stubborn.
Okay. Well, I kind of like him already.
When I asked him, he tells me he's in the Marine Corps and was in the Marine Corps for 10 years in the 1960s. And I said, where did you serve? And he said, I speak fluent Vietnamese. What else do you want to know? So.
Okay. Now I don't like him so much. I was on his side for a moment. And now
characters. We like characters in the newspaper.
I suppose.
News biz.
And so this is.
Did he say he was in the NOM? Because I love it when they say that.
When you slugging it out with Charlie. Let me ask you this. I was actually just talking to somebody about this the other day, that throughout military conflicts through the 20th century, that we would pick a representative name, not a surname, because that's the last name, right? Which is the Christian name?
your first name.
Is the Christian name the first name?
Yes.
Okay, so we would pick a Christian name for the for our adversary. So it would be like Jerry or Charlie or in the zombie war, Zach. And I don't know if we have one like for, you know, for Afghanis, whatever it was, Ivan for the Soviets. Is there one for us? Is that where the Joe thing came from?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was the, like in some conflict in the past, we were just known as Joe to everybody?
Sure.
All right. I can just check that off the list of things I've been wondering about.
I thought you were going to ask if we have anything for our Middle Eastern...
We do.
Is it Haji? Is that the...
No, Haji is...
That's a thing. That's a term I use.
It's a term. I think it's a term that is used, but I think it's...
I don't know if that's a name or a slur or whatever, but I hear that a lot. Like you hear military guys, like you'll see them interview and they'll go like, and then we see these three Hajis over the hill. And I'm like, okay.
I have this list running through my head now of things that could be a name or could be a slur.
I have...
for all sorts of groups.
Rick Emerson is the ugly American.
How you
weekdays.
Doing, Rick Emerson cracker?
I...
And there's a cracker in that scene. And
I should really get business cards that just say that. Rick Emerson, white oppressor.
The man.
When you talk about this realtor guy, and you said he was sort of, you know, he was sort of crusty and irascible, I just pictured like some sort of Dr. Zorba of the real estate.
That's good. Let's stick with that. I think we should.
I'll just say that it's that.
Yeah, I realized about 5 seconds into that spiel that I was just, what I was saying was completely boring. And then until I can come back here with, you know, women breastfeeding raccoons.
That happens sometimes, though. I mean, you know, we do the news show at noon, and every once in a while, like, I was reading a science story the other day about dust. And about two paragraphs in, we both realized that this is just boring.
It was literally about like the way dust floats around in the air. And at one point, I just started to hit my head on the microphone.
I have different segments of readers who are interested in different things. So I have people who, when I write about a political topic like that, just eat it up and we'll get 50 comments. And then there are people for whom their eyes will glaze over at the first paragraph.
It's a little less interesting than it might ideally be. It's not like there isn't, that there aren't interesting facets to that world. And clearly, if they are there, you will find them and you will convey them with a style and panache that only you can muster.
And then we can talk about Showgirls and Buffy.
That's right, exactly.
And often the story itself is much more interesting when you're reading the story than when you're listening to the synopsis.
And if anyone would like to talk about Oregonian subscription, just call me right here at the Rick Emerson Show.
The thing I was wondering about, we'll take care
of that for you on the phone. Just give us your have your credit card ready.
The thing I wonder about with realtors and is that I wonder two things. First of all, well, one is about like, you know, what is interesting to me is homeowners associations, which is a related but different field. The homeowners associations are fascinating. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't done a documentary about homeowners associations, because you always hear, like, you'll see these news stories every now and again where a guy wants to paint his house like puce or with some like polka dot,
or put up a flag.
Yeah.
Or just a lawn jockey.
You know, you just, sure. Like in your mind, like in your head, like flag and lawn jockey are right there on the same sort of, okay, let me ask you this. Here's a thing that I will actually see that term crop up, not with maybe regularity, but more often than you might think, like in conversation or in news reporting, the term lawn jockey, is that a thing? That is a de facto slur, is it not?
No.
Is that not in many regions of these United States, is that not a term that is occasionally used with directed at
I don't believe so. I believe the lawn jockey is
an actual thing.
It's like the lawn gnome. Now the thing is, the traditional lawn jockey was black,
right?
And it was considered sort of like the mammy statues,
like,
and things like that. Yeah, it was considered racist.
So maybe I'm just making the leap in my head that has transmogrified into a
Portlander
slur.
Such a Portlander that because something has been offensive at some point, we now just can't even use the term.
Well, I'm not saying you can't use it. It was just one of those things I realized I didn't actually know. And so I assume, as I think we've demonstrated in the past, I assume you know everything because you work at the newspaper.
I can fake it. Yes.
Lawn jockey is not like, for example, porch monkey. It is not one of those
maybe
phrases.
Maybe that's what you were thinking
might be
about.
That might be the phrase you're thinking of.
Am I thinking because it has the same meter to it?
Yes.
All right. We did, in fact, have... Now just plunging headlong into this. I will actually say we did have like a 35-minute conversation last week about Sambo's restaurant because we couldn't quite figure out. And I don't think we ever got a definitive answer. We got a lot of conflicting answers about whether the one in Lincoln City, which burned down at one point, was actually rebuilt. Because the guy was going to
read. I asked this question the last time I was here.
Were you, was it last Thursday when you were here?
Is it something about my alabaster skin that leads us in this direction?
Maybe.
You're the only person who comes on this show who is as white as we are. And so we, of course... Now we can all three be confused together.
Would you like a tab?
Apparently,
I would like a tab. Thank
apparently,
you.
There is actually a Lil Sambo's restaurant in Lincoln City.
Is it Lil?
Still. It's Lil Sambo's. And it actually
the
is
the least
there.
Successful Archie comic ever.
And they're saying it is a it's a Lincoln City landmark.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So they are saying.
All right.
And it was rebuilt, I guess. Or in 1960, it was relocated to its current location, and it has a putt-putt golf course. It was Pixie Pancakes originally. Then it became Little Black Sambo's, and then later changed its name to Little Sambo's. And yeah, and it's still there. And I guess it still has palm trees and tigers on the wall.
All right, then.
Oh, yeah, it was an electrical fire gutted it in 2001.
Well, that's when the guy...
And they rebuilt it.
And because the guy was really, as you would say, irascible about it. They interviewed the guy because I think there was some suspicion because there had been, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the protests and people are upset about it. And this guy who owned it, you know, had been really like, he'd been really sort of defiant about it. And there was some suspicion that it was arson or that it was, you know, there was some ne'er-do-wells that like torched the place somehow. And the guy was very, very like, you know, he was very sort of aggressively, you know, planning, like, I think they hadn't even put the fire out yet and he was already planning to put the thing back up. Because, and you got the sense that he, you got the sense he derived a little sort of tertiary pleasure out of just annoying people with it, which, you know, in a sort of, in a generalized sort of way, I can appreciate. You know, if someone really makes it their life work just to bother other people and they really just go for it like full bore. I mean, that's a thing that I can sort of get behind in theory. You know, it's like the we were talking about what's his name, Mubarak in Egypt. You know what? If somebody has power and they just, you know, and they just don't hesitate to use it, I can respect that in the abstract, in principle. You know, what is the point of having power if you're just not going to, you know, if it's just going to sit there in the glass case behind the thing that says break, you know, break when civil discord erupts?
Well, you could use your power, I don't know, to help others and to do good that's rather than to oppress and torture.
So much less satisfying and harder to do, by the way. I think if the if U.S. military policy has demonstrated one thing, it is a lot easier and more satisfying to blow things up than to build them, Dawn. You can get that done in 1/50th the time. I'm just trying to be efficient about everything. Everybody, look over there. It's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, even as she deals with claims that she assaulted a worker at the Betty Ford Clinic, Lindsay Lohan could be facing more legal trouble. She was implicated in the theft of a $2,500 necklace from a jewelry store, and an associate of Lohan's later turned it into the police. LAPD Lieutenant Jeff Burt says if charges are filed in this case, they could be serious.
Anything over $950 in value becomes a grand theft, so it becomes a felony investigation.
Jeff Kamen is the husband of the store's owner, and he says they can't talk about it.
We're just letting the police do what they need to do, and we're here to support whatever they ask us to do.
So was this a development from what we had earlier today, where the
yeah.
thing? Because it was an associate. Like somebody missed Lowen's camp.
Somebody returned the necklace to this jewelry store that went missing from this place that is within walking distance of where Lindsay Lohan lives.
So do you sort of imagine her just walking by, sort of, you know, and then just kind of into the night deposit box or whatever? I mean, it's would you return it? Did they just like toss it through the window around a brick? It seems like if somebody returned it, they had to hand it to somebody. You're not just going to drop it off. You're not going to, you know, you can't slide it under the door or something.
You go back and you give it. I think you're missing this. Lindsay Lohan didn't steal it.
Or it's just like
just saying
she found it on the floor.
It's like a vanilla envelope.
This was lying on the sidewalk outside.
How does Lindsay Lohan walk into a store and steal something?
Now,
like
we're not
that?
Saying that that was the case, of course. That is
no,
just, we're saying
no.
in theory.
Hypothetically, it's sort of like when Winona Ryder was arrested for shoplifting.
Right, right.
It's like how not smart do you have to be a celebrity and walk in some place and think you're going to get away with something like that.
Yeah, you're not exactly low profile.
Well, but maybe is it the other way around? Is it that you think that you are actually on camera and photographed and people stare at you all the time so much that you almost don't notice it after a while, and maybe you think you are being inconspicuous and you're really not? Like, you might not really be able to accurately measure when someone is staring at you.
Or you could also just be crazy and not really think about it and just go, everything belongs to me. I'm putting this in my pocket and going home.
The strange thing about Winona Ryder doing that is that, first of all, that it ever happened. I mean, it's odd that we lived in a time when Winona Ryder was being like picked up for being a klepto, and that nobody ever asks her about it. Because you think that if, like somebody occasionally, it's just the law of averages. You get some pushy journalist that would ask her a question, but I don't see anybody ever bring it up with her.
How often is she talking to journalists these days?
Well, that's also a fair point. I guess if, necessarily minute are her media appearances.
Did you have the moment in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot where it suddenly hit you that it was Winona Ryder playing Spock's mother?
Yes.
And you felt very old?
Yes. Even though I knew that it was going to be her, because I'd heard tell. But then you were sitting there, and it's like you just didn't really prod. Because, again, you don't go into any movie expecting to see Winona Ryder in it. Mm. It's like expecting to see Jimmy Walker in something. You just don't.
Well, she's in Black Swan, and she plays the older, used-up, worn-out ballerina.
Is she the Gershon to Natalie Portman's Berkeley?
No, that's Mila Kunis.
Okay.
But, and so she's like she's the one that's like, you be careful, Missy, because this road you're going down, you end up like me. I slept with him before, and I was famous, and now look at me. And she looks like
Is this Black Swan or True Grit? What movie is that?
But she looks like 5 miles of bad road, and I did find myself just going, is that because of the role she's playing? Or does she really look that bad?
I have actually wondered that several times where you see somebody that hasn't been on camera in a while and you go like, do they look like this in their everyday life?
And Aronofsky has no qualms about that because he cast Barbara Hershey as the mom, and she is just a scary, scary mask of plastic surgery,
My next celebrity question is, how do you not know when you're Barbara Hershey or say Demi Moore and you've had so much work done that you no longer look like something that nature would produce?
I can answer that question, actually. I can speak to that because
look at
your
him.
Face is looking very smooth today.
I was just going to say, because behold my recently chemically peeled face. I can actually talk about this because you have probably not watched Bigger Than Jesus at this point, but I only bring it up not because of my relentless self-focusing narcissism, but just because something you will notice when you watch that is you will notice how thick and lustrous my hair appears there, and it's got volume, body, and bounce to it. You know why?
No, why?
Full-on spray-on hair I used for that. That is like literally the Ronco, like, backstage,
really?
Because that is so. I don't know. I don't know if I've talked about this while you've been here. So I had a hair restoration surgery some years back, like 3-4 years ago, because I was in. And it's like the thing where like they had been advertising on the show for a long time, and one of the this is when I should have known, right? Is like when they approached me and they said, "So hey, like the AE, the sales guy." Who, like, handled the medical hair restoration account, he actually said, which is how he started every conversation. He said, the medical hair restoration company. And I said, yeah, I've heard their ads on the show. And he's like, they were interested if you, like, maybe you'd want to, like, talk to them and, maybe be a spokesperson, have, like, the procedure done. Which is like, and if somebody said that to you, like if somebody said, hey, about that rhinoplasty, firm that's been advertising, what would you think about being a spokesperson for them? You could connect those dots fairly easily, right? But that's because you weren't me. And I said, man, what are you talking about? Get out of here. You're crazy. And so then, fast forward to like 6 months later where we're doing that performance of Bigger Than Jesus at the Lincoln Performance Hall, where literally I am sitting backstage. I'm in like the makeup chair, and our friend Todd, the corpse, our friend Todd Workhoven is standing behind me, him and Joni DeRoshi, standing behind me with a can of goddamn spray on hair. And it's not like they lied to me and said it was Aquanet or something. Like it was like, hold on, Rick, don't move. We have to apply the spray on hair. Get a second can. And yet still, I just clung to this fiction, of like, no, this comb over is serving me very well. No one can tell that my hair is thinning. It just looks. And it wasn't until I was actually in I don't know if it was in La Center or somewhere, but I was in a casino somewhere. And, you know, in casinos, they have, like, cameras everywhere. It's the whole, like, eye in the sky thing. And I had the perfect positioning where I walked underneath a camera, and yet there was a monitor for that camera in my line of sight. And I looked and I went, oh, wow. And it was just that horrible sort of, like, I felt like Roy Scheider on the beach where the camera is pulling back and zooming in all at once. And immediately it's like I got back home. I think I may have called from my wife's cell phone, you know, calling Paul Halama. Paul Halama, are you still representing medical hair rest? We need to talk. Oh, the humanity. And it was like the next day or whatever that I just made. And it's like, and the guy, and then later, you know, the deals, you get the procedure and then you go in. I think every 6 months, and they, you know, just they can make sure that everything's sort of working, and they do photos of the progress, and then at the 1 year mark or whatever, they take like an after picture, and then they'll show you the before picture, which they actually don't show you. They make you wait a year to see your before picture, and the guy actually showed me my before picture, and it was astonishing. I mean, it was just, and it's like, and you wonder, like, how is it that I was just living in this land of unbelievable self-denial, and I have no explanation for it.
Well, I was watching the movie Rabbit Hole, and I've been kind of fascinated by Nicole Kidman's face for a while, because she was just a stunningly beautiful young woman.
Right.
And now she's a stunningly beautiful Martian.
Well, yeah, and then she went through this whole period a few years ago where she got, like, way too much plastic surgery, and yeah, people were saying she looked like the Joker. Everything mm-hmm. got stretched so tight that her mouth was way too wide and her forehead was immobile. And everything's kind of – I've noticed – that a lot of actresses get everything overdone, and then a couple of years later, it starts to look better. It actually takes a good year and a half, 2 years before it loosens up to where you actually look human again. It's like Sandra Bullock did the same thing. And so Nicole Kidman is looking a lot less frightening than she did before. But I was watching the movie Rabbit Hole and just kind of fascinated, staring at her face, and I suddenly realized that she got all the plastic surgery not because she wanted to look more youthful, but she got all the plastic surgery because she wanted to look like she did when she was 22. Because she really, you can actually see it on her face now. She's probably very happy with herself right now because she has what almost looks like a plastic Halloween mask
of herself,
of the girl who was in Dead Calm.
Right, right.
And that was a weird revelation for me to realize that a lot of these actresses, I mean, I can see, you know, you get the tuck, you get the tightening, you get the stuff because, you know, you live. You're in a business where your face is huge and every little wrinkle, every little sag is magnified and younger women are always coming along and getting the parts. But it's the ones who get the really extreme plastic surgery that you look at the Joan Rivers, you look at the Nicole Kidman, and you realize, no, you're trying to look like you did, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
It is not trying to look better. It is trying to look like an earlier version of themselves as opposed to a better version of their current selves.
Right.
I see. I can see that.
And it doesn't work.
No.
It reminds me to an extent of you know, everybody, I think everybody assumes that any competitive cyclist in like the Tour de France or that sort of thing, at a certain point, they all started doing drugs. They all started doing something against the rules because the human body is not built to do that. And sports journalists, for the longest time, did not talk about it. And entertainment reporters do not talk about plastic surgery in Hollywood when the reality is, I mean, you and I could sit here and we could come up with 25 mm-hmm. actresses who have obviously had work done. And like, well, it's you cannot deny they've had work done. And it
Actors, too. Bobby Roberts brought up the point of he was watching a really recent episode of Bones and said that David Boreanaz, it looks like David Boreanaz had some work done and something went a little bit awry around his mouth. And
wow.
that if you look at pictures of him even just like a couple of years ago versus how he looks right now, something is weird in his mouth. And it's like, and Bobby's theory was, I think he said he thought he looked like he was getting like some chin implants and some stuff done around his jawline. And it just didn't really quite work. And once he said that, I went and I looked and he's absolutely right.
What do you mean like a chin implant? Like what would he have been getting?
People that men get
I don't know a whole lot about plastic surgery.
Get silicone either injected or they will actually get like physical implants, like women get breast implants into their face.
Is it like where they take like your ass fat or something and then they stick it into your, you know, what, like at some other part of your body to shape it?
It's to build it up.
Either it's silicone or collagen, which generally it can come from your own body or it comes from just boiled down like pig parts and stuff.
And it sort of balances out how you get kind of jowly.
Yeah,
as you get older.
And oh,
like
I see.
Borean's
so
clearly was getting a little puffy and jowly.
That was my question. I was going to say I thought it would be the opposite. You would get thinking you'd get your face suctioned out or whatever. But it's so it's the it is a different way to solve the same problem.
Yeah, there's actually stuff in there you need.
If you puff up a little bit, you just want to make it all balanced.
Yeah, and it's make the jawline look sharp again and that sort of thing. And something went a little wonky around the mouth because his lower lip and just below his lip and above his chin looks a little bit weird.
Well, it's like, you know, Barry Manilow's the same way. Manilow's got that, like,
he's looking like the cat lady.
No, he's just, yeah, and I, he just, it really, as you said, just like, it's like he went to one of those roadside knick-knack stores, like in Lincoln City or you know, Seaside or something, and, you know, it's like you get those carved wooden, you know, those like carved wooden like tiki masks or something. It's like someone made a carved tribal mask of his face out of teak, and then he's just wearing it around, which I suppose, you know, I mean, whatever. I mean, I guess it's his face, but it's like
But I don't want to have to look at it.
I don't want to have to.
It's frightening.
That's the thing is like, and I don't have, and I should say, I don't have any problem with plastic surgery, obviously. I mean, it's like, I don't care, whatever. I mean, get whatever done. But it's like, at a certain point, it's like it becomes a point of diminishing returns, and where you've taken like a slingshot around the sun and you're going in reverse and you are actually going further into the land of negative math, where you are becoming more and more unappealing and not even unattractive, but weird looking.
Nicole Kidman is frightening to look at.
Well, Kenny Rogers is the one that I always think of because, I mean, I think at a certain point he was really upfront about the fact that he's like, I got it done and it went wrong. Burt Reynolds, same thing. I mean, Burt Reynolds, it's not like if you'd never seen him before, if you didn't know what he's supposed to look like, you might see him and go like, well, his face looks a little tight and shiny. He's probably a guy who's had some work done. But what I think is unnerving is it's the cognitive disconnect that you get. When you have, it's like drinking Crystal Pepsi. When you have an idea of what it's supposed to, you know, tastes like and what it looks like are two different things. And you know, Burt Reynolds, and then you see him and you get an uncanny valley sort of situation going on where it's like, you know, it's like watching Polar Express where you go, they look like children, except they seem kind of dead.
Well, and Patrick Swayze, the last towards the end of his life as well, had the very odd looking Bruce Jenner. If you ever see any of those photographs of him from his Kardashians stuff.
And shiny.
Oh, my God. He is terrifying looking.
Tight and shiny is going to be the name of my autobiography.
Gene Simmons is heading that way, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he did. Did you see the Family Jewels episode when he did that?
I did. Well, he and Shannon Tweed both had to, well, we got to go get our plastic surgery together, honey.
To his credit, he actually, he went on, was it Oprah something? Maybe it was he went on, it was like either a daytime show or it might have been like a, not Nightline, but like one of those, you know, like a 2020 thing about plastic surgery. And I got to give credit to Gene Simmons. It's funny, we were talking about Steven Tyler the last time you were here and how he just doesn't give a rip because he's Steven Tyler. Gene Simmons clearly is out there. He's like, I'm Gene Simmons. What do you know, who cares? He got all of this plastic surgery done in Family Jewels and he actually he went on camera immediately following all of the surgery. Like basically he went to the recovery room and like, that night they filmed him, and I mean, you know, and so you've seen anybody who's had surgery or plastic surgery, I mean, afterward, it looks like you've been beaten with a pipe. I mean, and he just looked awful, you know, not because of the plastic surgery as such, but because of the procedure itself and the swelling hadn't gone down. And I was sort of impressed that he allowed the cameras to see everything he was having done because he wore like a series of bad wigs throughout the 80s because he wouldn't admit that he was losing his hair. So that he did that and that he allowed himself to look so terrible on camera as a result of the plastic surgery, you know, in a way, I think diffuses. I think if you let people see that, it lets the tension out of the whole situation. When you see somebody on camera, you see somebody interviewed and nobody is mentioning the fact that, hey, you look like a different guy than you did last time. I think if more actors or celebrities would do that, I think it would actually be less awkward for everybody.
I just want to point out, this is why the rest of the world hates us. Because we're just horribly shallow, vain people.
Well, see, you and I are on different sides of the. I think you and I look at the same coin from two different sides. In that, I view this as really why the rest of the world ought to befriend us and ought to be, you know, they ought to be our pals. Because the 9/11 hijackers, there was that story, and I don't know if it would ever turn out to be true. It seems like it has an equal chance of being apocryphal or accurate, where they all went to Vegas for like a week or something before they, before the hijacking, which I can buy, you know. I mean, in a strange way, I mean, that makes sense to me, because it will either you really want to, like, drink deeply from the cup of life before you die, or you want to, like, fuel your hatred against the oppressors.
Just in case those 1,000 versions don't appear.
Right. I mean,
we got to get some in right now.
Or you're just like, oh, I'm not quite sure that they're an evil, immoral, great Satan. Let's go to Vegas.
Oh, yeah. If you want to remember why you hate the United States, go to Vegas.
But just as when I go to Vegas, it reinforces how much I love this country, I can see why it would have the opposite effect. You know, it's the great thing about Vegas is it's like a one-size-fits-all solution. Whatever you want to believe about humanity, Vegas will underscore and reinforce that belief. But I sort of joked at the time. I said, you know, if we could just sort of drop mini Vegases around the world, and then just like donuts, and a red box machine or something, you know, and then just say like, look, just try it out for 6 months. We'll come back. If you still want to have a jihad, you know, then fine. That's up to you. But we want you to have an informed opinion about what you're hating.
Take the burqa off. Put on these comfortable shoes. We'll talk.
Say like, we're going to send you a Pizza Hut and a strip club and a mall and a tanning place. And it's like, you just indulge yourself. It's on us, you know, it's a trial period. And then we'll come back and you see if you really hate capitalism. Because my theory is that, you know, probably 30% of the world would cling to whatever beliefs they had about the United States before that. I'm guessing the average person, if they were just shown a Vegas buffet and we just said, you see this buffet? It's an all-you-can-eat and it's $3. I don't think we would have enemies in like two-thirds of the places we currently do. If we just said, look, if you just give up the guns right now, we'll put a buffet in on every corner. You know, we got all the food. We have all the money. We can do it. I really honestly believe that is just, because look, if you're just—
All-you-can-eat buffets are the secret to world peace, is what you're saying.
I think if you're living in a place where your meal is dirt clods, that seeds for anger.
I do. I have this image of jihadists coming in off the desert and the buffet and, I'm skeptical. But they're crab legs.
Tuesday is pot roast night.
The frozen yogurt. Look.
And I know that people are saying, oh, Rick, there's some humor. There's some comedy value to this buffet riff you're going on right now. I see why. Yeah, it's a good way to fill a few minutes on the show before we get back to the news. But I don't feel it as a practical application or that it would work in reality. Here's the proof that it would work in reality. You know who doesn't complain for the most part about the corrupt nature of America? Americans. You know why? Because they got strip clubs and Vegas buffets, and that's it. So I'm just saying, if you want to quell a people's anger, you just listen to Rick Emerson. He will show you the way, kids.
Speaking of buffets, you know what I'm glad we don't have here in Portland? Are the KFC all-you-can-eat buffets.
Don't we?
I don't believe we have any of those at any of our locations here in Portland. And if we do, I don't want to know.
Because it wasn't a buffet as such. It was like a twice-a-week thing they would do. It was like a Tuesday and Thursday.
Well, because I know some of them in the Midwest, they do that every day for lunch.
Oh, God, no.
And it's like, it's just open. And they've got all of the chicken and the mashed potatoes and the stuff and the things. And also in the Midwest and in the South, they also have, like, apparently you can get gizzards and stuff, which we don't have here. You can get the necks and the livers
the
and the hearts
of,
and the things.
Taste
the bag
events.
Of gizzards.
The bag of parts.
Which my husband would eat, by the way, because he loves that stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember I was looking for something about Kentucky Fried Chicken online one day. I don't know why. I was looking for some information about Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I came across the website for a KFC in, like, Indiana or something, and it was like, our all-you-can-eat lunch buffet. And I said, huh? And at the time, I lived in North Portland, and there were two KFCs, like, within, like, a half a mile of my house. And I was like, I am so glad they don't have that here, because I would be even fatter than I am now.
Have we talked about the whole where do you fall down on the big KFC Popeyes question?
No, we haven't.
Okay.
But
let's go around the room. Dawn?
I believe Popeyes is superior.
Anna?
If my choice is KFC Popeyes, I take Popeyes. But if I'm anywhere...
Your choice is anything other than that.
No, I am a Southern girl, and I would take a Bojangles over either of those.
I have never gone to a Bojangles. Is that a Southern only? I mean, I've heard of it, but does it not exist outside of the South?
No, I don't believe so. Or up until recently, a Chick-fil-A.
Was it you actually that told me that they apparently donate money to all kinds of like weird anti-gay causes.
Apparently, I like their food, but they do not like me.
Yeah,
you should, you know, you just go by and just wave the $10 at them at the food court before you go to McDonald's
You'll
or whatever.
Kiss my spouse in front of them and then move
seriously.
On. Seriously, and we had children too. We bred. Take that.
Is a Bojangles? Is it a similar restaurant?
I mean, it's chicken.
Basically, the thing about Popeyes though that really tilts me in their favor is those biscuits they have, which are just like, and it's like they, and I don't know if I'm imagining this or if this is a thing they really have. Maybe I'm just hallucinating it as a thing that somebody ought to invent. But it seems like the last time I went to a Popeyes, which has been a while, but they had like the little, you know, it's like you get the little foil packets of, you know, like sauce or honey or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it seems like that Popeyes did in fact have a packet that was a butter honey mix. And so it was already mixed inside the little foil packet.
You've never been outside the Western United States, have you?
No, not really.
Oh my gosh, honey butter is very...
Is honey butter sort of like fry sauce? That's a thing that they know about in certain places, but not others.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, all right. Yeah, well, because it's
they also have the like red beans and rice. They have much better side dishes at Popeyes in addition to having better chicken.
Boy, a place that has good sides really, and that is like, that can make or break a restaurant too. Especially a place that is centered on a particular food item like a chicken or steak. It really is like it is the sides that can make or break that place in terms of whether you want to go back there. So honey butter is the thing. Can you just is it a thing they serve or is it a thing you can buy or both?
In many restaurants in the South, it is the thing that will serve you with your biscuits or your cornbread or.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
See, this is another one of those things where it's like somebody ought to invent, and then I find out that somebody has invented it.
I'm sure you could go online and find honey butter.
That is wonderful.
They serve honey butter with the cornbread at Marie Callender's.
Oh, I love me some honey butter. That's fantastic. All right. We probably are already in the news, so we should just continue.
Okay.
We're already here. We're already doing the thing.
Well, let's do our penis watch.
All right. Because otherwise...
Because it's not a Thursday without a penis watch.
Honey butter and penises go together like nothing else, I'm told.
You can read her three times a week in the Oregonian, kid. She's Anna Griffin. Because here's basically the way the flow chart is. We can either continue with the news, which apparently in this case is a penis watch, or we get the top five that we can either do today or tomorrow, or I have this, which now I've just, you know, I've just delayed it so long that I don't even know there's any point, but we were going to talk a little bit about movies. And then I got this whole... neurosis happening with my deodorant that probably nobody wants to hear.
Well, why don't we do the do the penis watch and then we'll do the movie discussion because we wanted to do that with Anna here.
Just scratch deodorant off the list of things we're going to talk
about. Deodorant tomorrow.
No, it's like I just don't even.
I would rather not talk about your body odor, but
it's not okay. Now look, it's not about my body odor as such. Here's the
thing. You weren't here the day we talked about his basket of 20 different expensive hair products.
It's not 20.
He has at home.
It's not 20 different hair products. It's only five, and
they cost like $17, $18
a piece.
I think was that because of the conversation we had about everything being filled with sea salt now?
Yes.
And did I think if I remember correctly, it wasn't just that I revealed that I have a great number of hair products, but that I actually had two of them with me that day,
right,
like in my bag. Yeah.
And they have like, you know, mango butter and panda saliva and sea salt.
It takes a real
them.
Man to use these
yes.
kinds of products.
Well, and even especially because, like, here's the thing, like, and this is where you see your vanity really does. It's like if you have a flowchart, like a face off in your head of all of your different attributes, what I was talking the other day about I think I said something on Facebook about there was some scenario in which my vanity and my greed faced off against one another. Oh, it was the hair products thing actually, and I said this is the one case where my vanity actually will outweigh my greed. It is in my choice of hair products, and a guy said, you know, we've been listening to the show for a long enough, and we know that, you know, nothing outweighs your vanity. It really is like the weight of the earth itself. Because I'm buying hair products, even though I'm reading the label, and I'm a fairly bright guy, I'm looking at the label and realizing it's just filled with lies. It's like when a skin product, like you go to, you know, you ladies, you go to Bath and Body Works or whatever, and it's so like moisturizes your skin. Here's the thing: nothing moisturizes your skin. Your skin's dead. It can't be moisturized. There's nothing moisturizes your hair. It's dead. There's nothing that can be. You can't moisturize a corpse. And that's what's happening there. I know it's a lie. And yet I just am completely, I just, you know, swallow it hook, line, and sinker like a big exfoliating trout. So there you go. What are we doing here? Penis watch?
Yes.
Here's your penis watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away.
I'm so sorry, Anna Griffin of the Oregonian.
And I apologize in advance for this story.
Does your family listen to this show ever? It's okay if they don't. I won't be offended.
Just, I don't think I've ever been here for Penis Watch before. I think this is a big moment for us.
I think that's either a lie or there's a thing you've willfully forgotten.
Maybe I've blacked it out. It's like middle school.
I think like the first two times you were on the show because didn't...
Yeah, because it started being this thing of like, oh, God, we have another Penis Watch. Why do we keep inflicting Penis Watches on Anna Griffith?
Because then it almost seemed like a thing. It became a thing we were really self-conscious of because it was like luck of the draw that the Penis Watch was always being racked up like as you were like getting ready to come on the show that day. And for a while, we wondered if we were like, are we subconsciously doing it? Why is this happening?
Trying to drive her away?
She hates men. Let's do Penis Watch.
Well, this is especially an unfortunate story, but it has to be told.
Here's the thing. We'll do the story, and then I will end it with an email about the Penis Watch as a show element, as a show segment that will take some of the awkward out of the room. Here's Don Taylor.
A Kentucky man faces charges after Louisville Metro Corrections officers said they discovered suspected crack cocaine in the foreskin of his penis. According to the arrest report, officers asked Antoine Banks if he had any drugs, weapons, or contraband on him as he entered Metro Corrections after his arrest. He told them he didn't. During a clothed pat-down, officers said they found a small bag of suspected cocaine tied to the waistband of Banks' boxers. After that bag was found, a strip search was ordered. During the strip search, another small bag was in the foreskin of his penis.
Okay.
Circumcision is cleaner, kids. It really is.
First of all, that's either, I mean, either we're talking a really, really small bag, or this is a man who grew up next to a nuclear facility of some kind. Because I can't imagine how, I mean, really, I mean, are we just talking
no expert on foreskins.
But crack you can speak about. So we're talking about it like a crack rock is how big?
Well, that could be very, very tiny.
The size of a pea?
Yeah. Yeah.
No pun intended. So he would just have that maybe wrapped and then just sort of.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could put it in one of those little tiny Ziploc bags and then maybe roll it up in a tube.
That is a serious level of addiction right there.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where you read. See, here's the thing. You ought to take this story and read. They probably wouldn't ask you back. But you read this to school kids.
The DARE officer comes in and let me tell you, you know how bad it can be, kids.
And this is, you're willing to smoke a thing came out of a guy's foreskin. I mean, and the kids, I think, would just go like, I'm not going to try that. I'm not going to try whatever it is that makes you do that.
That does not sound cool.
No.
So there is, I did upload a photo of Antoine Banks to RickEverson.com pictures.
Oh my God.
So you can see, and he just looks peeved. See, there's a photograph. He looks peeved that he was caught. So he was originally arrested after a traffic stop led to the discovery of a bag of salvia and liquid codeine. So then
salvia is that weird plant thing we're always talking about.
Yeah, that's actually legal, but you know, they're trying to make it illegal. But so he had the salvia and the liquid codeine. So then he was arrested, taken into jail. They found the small bag of cocaine tied to the waistband of his boxers, strip search after that, and then they found the bag of with
Jobs
the crack.
You don't want to be. You
in,
don't want to be the correctional
foreskin.
Officer in Louisville, Kentucky.
Here's the other thing, by the way. The other thing about this story is, Yeah, he doesn't look happy. That's a whole lot of like...
I can't believe they looked at my penis.
it's just a sensing like, you know, in addition to all of this, he's just, I would imagine a very unpleasant lecture from his boss, you know, whoever it is. Because he must have been, I was going to say, he must have been trafficking or with intent to sell or something.
Yeah, something. Or he was just going to use it to buy his way into the good graces of the guys in the yard or something.
But on the other hand, what did they pick him up for originally?
It was a traffic stop, and then they found the salvia and the liquid codeine.
And then the penis crack.
Right. Well, then they found the
baggie.
The boxer.
But so he wasn't like he was on his way to jail. He wasn't turning himself in or something.
No.
So he didn't. So this was a thing he had on him for some. So in other words, was he transporting it somewhere? Because that's not a lot of crack. You figure if you're going to be carrying crack to sell, you carry more than that.
I don't know.
Or is
know.
That just where he secures his things?
The stuff
like a traveler's wallet.
Yeah. because they didn't say how much was tied to the waistband of his boxer shorts. The sticking it in his foreskin may have been like sort of a
his own personal supply.
Yeah, maybe like while he was in the car. Before he got arrested, he thought, where can I hide this?
Is it like when you get a milkshake and they bring you that metal glass on the side that has all the leftover? And they're like, here's a little bit of leavings. Sir, this wouldn't fit in the glass. I hope you'll enjoy it. Thank you. All right. That's awesome. Yeah, he does look very – that. But that's the sort of thing. Like if you were to just tell kids, like, look, if you how many of you kids would like to carry something wrapped around your penis? None of you? Okay, then. Here's what will happen if you – because that is the sort of thing. And then, you know, then you could avoid the whole thing where they do like a little calisthenics routine and it, like, spell something out with their arms to a hip-hop song. Because that never keeps anybody off any kind of drug.
No.
The only thing I can think of that the man ever does now that might keep you off drugs is that Faces of Meth – thing where they show the woman where it's like eventually she's like a caved in grapefruit. That's a thing that might stop you from doing it.
Actually, the current concern is bullying. I saw a story the other day that they have Ronald McDonald going around to elementary schools now to sing songs and do dances and to tell kids to be nicer to each other. And again, you look at it and you think, I was a kid once.
Not going to work.
No, that's not going to do a damn thing.
No. That works about as well as like when the parent goes to school to loudly complain about his child being bullied, which just results in the kid getting like five times as many beatings the next time recess comes around. All right. I'll end this wonderful segment by reading this email. Comes from listener Nick. I got this yesterday. Subject line of this email is awkward. He says, Rick, I almost had an awkward moment just now. I took a trip to the bathroom, and as I bellied up to the urinal, I realized I was singing the penis song to myself. Totally oblivious to it, he says. Lucky for me, no co-workers were there. That seems like a conversation with HR if I begin singing Take a Look at My Enormous Penis with anybody else nearby. Best show ever, Nick.
Yes.
So there you go. Thank you. That is Nick. There you
Take
go.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away.
Bow, bow,
I take
bow,
a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
All right, then. God almighty. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is 503-505-6964. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guest will include Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the life and career of Mr. Flip Wilson. Let us do this. Take a very brief break here. We'll come back, do a little bit of movie talk, maybe get the top five, maybe not, and then wrap things up. You need to be – you got like half an hour or something?
Yeah, something like that.
You have an event, a happening, a thing?
I do have to get home in a timely fashion, and plus I'm parked at the
You're parked at the tow-away place.
So if I don't move my car by 4,
and it's
doomed.
It's Thursday. It's Patrick's gaming night.
It is.
Okay.
He has to go to his geek hoedown.
I think I've asked you this before, but did they never use your home for this?
No, because we're in Tualatin, and one of the guys is in Vancouver, and so and then somebody else is in Clackamas, and it's just more convenient for them to meet at this one guy's place in Southeast because it's kind of central to where everybody is.
What did they play at the Geek Hoedown?
I believe right now they're playing Dungeons and Dragons.
I was going to ask if it was just like your regular Dungeons and Dragons game, or if they were playing like Warhammer 40,000.
No, they're playing Dungeons and Dragons, and Patrick was talking about – he comes home and he just tells me stuff and it goes right out of my head. And he was telling me about how they were defeating their bad guys and he was casting spells. And then I saw his character sheet and I said, so you're playing a barbarian? And he said, yeah. I said, but you're casting spells? He said, well, yeah, they're not very powerful spells.
He's a multitasking barbarian.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
If you're a barbarian, why would he be resorting to magic anyway? It seems like he could have some sort of a melee assault that might...
Because his choice is usually to play the big thudding guys. He usually plays like a paladin because he wants to be on the side of right and good and then smash things.
Uh-huh.
So, but I'm like... Paladin, a barbarian who casts spells? Even I know that makes no sense.
By the way, can I just say that there was the greatest little moment of gamer discussion, I don't know, a couple weeks ago when, our friend Diana, her husband Prime.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all, I don't know if it was the poker game or wherever we were.
You did go out for burgers before the poker game.
But I wasn't there. It was somewhere. But anyway, it was me and my wife and our friend Prime and his wife Diana, who many of you know. And anyways, but I think he was talking about Dungeons & Dragons. And my wife has never, you know, she kind of plays the Settlers of Catan. And by the way, can I just tell you this? So she's a nurse. And so apparently one of the things that being a nurse gives you is just a it's a steady supply of just captive participants in whatever game you feel like playing. So apparently large sections of her workday on, I think, Monday were spent playing Risk with her. And then she was all upset because she was like this close to like owning the whole board, to like total world dump, to, you know, taking over all of Eurasia or whatever. You know, and then it's like then it was med time or something. And everybody she was like, and I wasn't able to finish. But she's never really played like role playing games as such. I think the closest she got is she's played a little Magic the Gathering. But I think the math frightens her off of role playing games a little bit. But she was talking to Prime about it, and he was like, well, I've been a role playing enthusiast for quite some time, and for many years I've enjoyed any number of role playing games. Yes, and she said. She said, well, tell me a bit about your character. And he's like, well, my character's name is, Lortan or something. And she says, and it was just the delivery that was just perfect. And because Prime is he's maybe not a physically imposing man. You know, he's tall and slender and bespectacled and looks a little bit like am I going David Niven? Is that where I'm going?
Well, whatever. Sure, why not?
Doesn't matter. But she just, it was the really bright delivery when she said, tell me a little bit about your character. And he said, oh, he's a very fey elf. And he just said it with the biggest smile on his face and then like took a huge bite of his hamburger or something. It was awesome. And it was like he had been waiting his entire life to tell somebody that, like for somebody to ask the question so he could just – so he was very ebullient in his response. It was awesome. All right. We should do this. We'll come back on the other side. We'll have a little bit with that. We'll talk. We'll laugh. We'll dance. And then the other things of that nature. Stay there. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Indeed. The Rick Emerson radio program made possible by, of course, a generous grant from y'all, the very fine audience and listeners who are flung across the globe from corner to corner to corner, including now, I believe we determined this the other day, our fifth listener in Australia. So... hello there. How are you?
And somebody from the
Dawn thinks her microphone is on right now, and she's saying something. I can kind of read. I can read her lips, and I can tell from her arched eyebrows that it was probably something borderline insulting. Let's find out. What was that, Don?
Saying we also have a new listener from the fine country of New South Wales.
Ah, it's so comforting to know that I can tell what you're saying about me, even when I can't hear it. If you are enjoying this program, which I can't imagine a world in which you wouldn't be enjoying this program and thinking to yourself, my God, I'm agog at the quantity of entertainment that I get for a mere 32 cents a day. One of the other folks who makes that possible is Joe Squires, and his company, Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. Squireselectric.com is their website, or you can call them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. And I'm not going to go so far as to say there are only two types of people in the world when it comes to home repairs regarding electricity, but it is a thing that you either feel comfortable doing yourself or you don't. And if you don't feel comfortable dealing with the electricity in your home or the wiring or the installation of that wiring or the upkeep of that wiring or, God forbid, it's not even this. It's like if something just quits working. I mean, beyond changing the bulb, there's really not a lot I can do. My wife says, well, I don't know, it was light in the room and now it's dark. And it's like, I basically can do the thing of going, and shaking the light bulb, and then, and then putting another light bulb in. And then half the time it's because it's one of those damn Al Gore light bulbs that actually doesn't, you can barely see. You just turn it on and it's like you're just in some like weird flickering, David Fincher hell film. But even presuming that the light bulb is bright enough, if the light bulb actually doesn't work, then I am at loose ends because I got nothing. It could be the wire. It could be the plug. It could be the cord to the lamp. It could be one of the prongs on the thing. It could be the thing that the prongs on the thing go into. I mean, I am just absolutely in the middle. I'm in the tall grass. I'm in the weeds at that point. Now, you may not be like me, and I hope for your sake and for the sake of your loved ones that you are not. But even if you do understand how electricity operates, you might find that it's just a thing you don't have time for, and it's just going to take up, you know, just days and weeks of your life, trying to get everything installed or updated or inspected. If you are a business operator, you're a business owner, you're at a restaurant, the man is going to come by, and he's going to try to see if you are suitable to remain in business and be serving the public. You want to make sure that you pass that the first time around so you're not just... You're not stuck 3 weeks in the past and having to get the place re-inspected. It's going to cost you time. It's going to cost you money. It's going to lead to frustration and agita. You can avoid all these things by talking to Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. Don't be a hero, kids. Do it the way that Uncle Rick suggests. That's SquiresElectric.com at 503-252-1609. Free estimate so you know about what you're going to pay up front. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and inspectors. SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is SquiresElectric.com, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Was a moonlight mishap? You lost your party hat. Seems your lifestyle ain't so worthwhile after all. A heavy-hearted taxi ride and a walk on the wild side. Did your guardian angel let you down? Gonna lay low and play it straight. It's time to rejuvenate. Gonna kickstart your heart to come around. I can't stop.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Oh, the conversations we have. It is the... I'm not sure that you answered the question about whether or not your family listens to this this program. And again, I won't be offended if they don't.
Not my small children.
Okay, well, that's proper. I would. I'm not saying that I would be shocked.
There's
but it
not
would,
enough conversation of Star Wars droids or Disney princesses for my children to be interested.
Well, half of that equation we can take care of.
Oh.
When it comes to Disney princesses, you're probably on your own there. But I
Disney princesses as Star Wars droids. That's the direction I want this to head.
By the way, Mr. Emerson here has not seen Toy Story 3.
It's so good.
Yeah, so we were talking about this between shows today. Why did that even come up?
Well, because we were talking about hedgehogs, and I was talking about Mr. Pricklepants and how much I love Mr. Pricklepants.
I didn't know there was a hedgehog.
Yes.
I am a hedgehog enthusiast. Just because, A, they're adorable, and also because I have had a couple of hedgehogs, and I told Don that the great – it is as what's his name, as John Rogers said about buying a dog. He said, you're buying the saddest day of your life. and so it is with hedgehogs, but they only live for like 4 years. And so I had two hedgehogs more or less back-to-back. And it was just like, and I was just so like unbelievably, I was just like so totally destroyed as a human being when they died that I made that vow. Like, I'm not getting any more hedgehogs. I just can't take the pain. But they're still fantastic. And I did not know that in Toy Story 3 that they had that they introduced. I knew there were some characters that were new because it's the deal that Woody goes to like live with another. Does he get taken to Goodwill or something?
Well,
or?
Yeah, the toys accidentally get taken to a daycare and given to the daycare, and so where they encounter all of the toys that are at the daycare.
Okay.
And I'm not going to spoil it for you. But then Woody is separated from them. He ends up in a separate place for a while, and he's in a house where there's a little girl and she has some other toys as well. And so he has an encounter with these other toys, and one of those toys is Mr. Pricklepants.
I'm glad that that you said it was, and you raved about it when you first saw it.
Oh,
was
yeah.
It in 3D?
Oh, it's fantastic.
It is in 3D, but it doesn't need to be.
Not necessary.
Yeah. It was Pixar does a fine job with the 3D. It's not gratuitous and it's not garish.
It's not ladled on.
Or distracting in any way. It was really nice, but you certainly don't need it to enjoy the movie.
It's not, they're not doing the thing of like, you know, and let me bounce a paddle ball at the screen.
I think there's a little bit of that, actually. There's a couple of those just to kind of, you know, toss you.
Well, you got kids that are going to see it,
yeah,
too. So.
But really, no, it's really more just atmospheric.
Do you get the weird darkening of the screen image with that, or is it just not because there's such quality control freaks
out. And again, when the movies are designed specifically for 3D, you don't get that. That's more a problem when it's a 2D film that's been reconfigured.
So
for
they
3D
did this
later.
For 3D, like,
yes.
From the beginning.
Yes.
You saw it and you just raved about it, which I was really, really, and I was glad to hear that, A, because, you know, it's like one more good movie in the world for me to watch. And I haven't seen it yet, and it's one of those things that I just sort of been, you know, putting it off, and it always seems like there's some other thing that I got to be watching first. Because I think I told you I was trying to get all the Oscar films. I think what I said is I'm trying to get all that Oscar crap watched before the ceremony or whatever. But I haven't seen Toy Story 3, but I'm glad that it's good because, A, I'm glad that there's another good movie for me to watch, and B, because I root for Pixar.
Yeah.
Because, especially with, like, sequels, because that's such tricky, you know, that's such dicey territory there. Like, there's a great book, it's called Icon, about the Steve Jobs, came out a few years ago, and they talked about, when he sort of took over, when he got Pixar from George Lucas, who traded it away before his divorce because he didn't want to have to, like, he didn't want to have to pay on it because it was going to be counted as half of his assets, I think. But they talked about Jobs' negotiations with Eisner at Disney, and every time Pixar would have a huge hit, his leverage over Disney just increased. And of course, you know, Steve Jobs, like, he is never a guy to let a little bit of leverage go to waste. And he actually, they said that Eisner was just like, every time Pixar would release a film, that Eisner was in this weird position of rooting for it to fail because he didn't want Jobs to have any more leverage over him. Because when the final negotiation, at least at this time, that Jobs did with him, Jobs actually went in and he had this whole like laundry list of demands. And he said, like, A, we're going to take like, you know, 50% of the profit, and B, we're going to take all of the merchandising, C, we're going to take all the sequel rights. He said, and then they said, and it's one of those things that I would just give anything. I would cut off one of my fingers to have been in the room just to watch him do this because he's such a master of these things. And then Jobs had this long, dramatic pause, and he did the – because it's that thing he does at Macworld where he goes the, oh, and one more thing, you know, iPod. Where he did some variation of that, and he goes, oh, and also it's going to need to say Pixar Disney from now on, not Disney Pixar. So anyway, and then he's – and it was so clearly time just to be a kick right at Eisner's junk. But Eisner apparently was just rooting for Finding Nemo to fail because that was the one he said, like, this will be their undoing. This will be their Waterloo. Yeah. And it didn't happen. And sequels are so difficult. They thought Toy Story 2 was going to fail, and it didn't. So I'm glad that they made it work.
I hope against hope. I think that they have the integrity to just leave it at this point because it did make such a phenomenal amount of money.
Does it have a closure?
You know that there are segments of the executive suites that are just pushing and pushing and pushing for another one. But the thing is, it's you know, like, again, like the end of The Shield.
Yeah.
Like that episode at the end of season 3 of Californication.
You want it to wrap up?
It's done. The story has now closed out. And that's part of why, like I was telling you, this entire row of film critics, we were just sitting there weeping like children because it's one of those crying your eyes out at a happy ending kind of endings of a movie, but also that crying because you're going, and now it's over. There's not going to be any more Toy Story anymore. But it is. It's like, yes, they finished it. The story is done now.
And they got the ending they deserved. They earned the ending that they...
Well, yes. Pixar always earns it. That's the thing about this sentiment in their movies is it's never cheap or cloying. It is, it sounds like a strange comparison, but it's not unlike Arrested Development or South Park when they have those moments of poignancy and it's like, but they get there fairly. They don't just reach into the bag and bring it out.
As opposed to Modern Family, say, which is more traditional in that it's like every episode you have to have the here's what we learned.
Right. Well, there's the three acts, and then the redemptive ending, which just feels so tacked on. It's like, again, where it's like you're playing a sort of Mad Libs, thing with the script. And Pixar it never feels cheap. They always make you feel like you have arrived at the ending, through a series of logical steps. So,
when I praise Pixar unreservedly, it's sort of like with the Matrix movies. I just pretend that Cars never existed.
See, there's a sequel to Cars coming out.
Oh, I know.
And Cars is not a bad film. I mean,
but it's so not up to the standards of everything else as far as the writing.
That's the thing. Is like compared to other Pixar films, it is not, it's not a masterpiece.
It's still better than
certainly.
Any of the Shrek movies.
Oh, yeah.
It is, but yeah, it's that thing where it's like
it's better than Madagascar.
A bad Pixar film is still so much better than, I think we've talked about this with, the bad episodes of, I forget what we were talking about. We were talking about Sorkin's new show.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the story, even though people have said he's going back to the well because he's doing another behind the scenes of a late night TV show thing or whatever. It's like a back to the well from Sorkin. I'll still watch before I watch almost anything else. And Pixar, it's like you get the feeling they are constitutionally incapable of making a bad film.
How are your kids? Do they enjoy the Pixar films? Are they just?
Oh, they love them.
You're going through the Disney Princess phase, so I'm just.
Well, you probably don't tolerate a lot of bad, like flat out bad children's films.
It is hard to avoid because we travel a bit for people with kids, and so you have to have a large enough supply of movies that say on the 6-hour flight to New York every summer, you can keep them entertained.
Do you have the DVD thing in the back of the car or whatever?
No.
Where you just, oh, yeah, see, that's the
no.
– was it you that was – you were actually wondering why they don't have gaming systems in the back of the car?
We're going on a big trip this spring, and there's been talk like, can we hook the Wii up somehow? Is there any way just stick the boys all the way in the back seat and let them –
And I think there's a certain amount of and I also don't have a problem with parents who say who like have the TV or the whatever mind the kid for X number of hours on vacation during a plane trip during a whatever. I have no issue with
what
that whatsoever.
What you want, I think, is you want it to be a special thing though.
Right.
You don't want and so my kids don't watch any TV during the week. And so
really?
On the weekends occasionally we'll put a movie on for them and they can watch that and it becomes a big deal. It becomes a we're going to sit down and watch.
So they don't. So is that a rule in the house that they just don't watch TV Monday through Friday?
Yeah.
Is that now? If I can ask, none of my business. Now, is that going to stay in effect until they're a certain age, or have you thought that far ahead?
We haven't thought that far ahead. Although I suspect it there will come a point where, because they go to bed and we watch an hour of something a night probably, and at some point.
Do you worry about like the social integration aspect of it?
They pick that stuff up. I mean, it's scary how young they start picking that stuff up, even without. The kid comes home and starts talking about Disney princesses, and she's never seen a princess movie. Or he comes home and starts talking about Indiana Jones and hasn't seen Raiders or any of the sequels yet.
I am fascinated by that because I, and I've never made a secret of this, that I was really raised by the TV to some degree. Now, and to be fair, my sister, God bless her, actually taught me to read when I was very young. And apparently, and talking to her years later, in retrospect, what was she apparently deliberately wanted me to learn to read before I started watching a lot of TV. Because her whole theory, which I have come to embrace as the truth, is that it's a question of whatever gets there first. Yeah. It's like, do books or TV, you know, who wins the race to your kid's head? And so she taught me to read. But then I watched and still watch, you know, a ton of television. So I was raised by the TV to some degree. But on the other hand, I think if I did have kids, I would certainly make them read for several years, I think, before they were allowed to watch it with impunity. But then it's like, you know, living in like in Salt Lake, you'd meet these families, especially the sort of outlying families that took a real, like I would meet people who were 18, 19, 20, who had no pop culture knowledge in a broader sense because they had never watched television. It had just not been allowed. And like they had lived on a street of similar families. And it's weird because it is a little bit of awkwardness. But they probably, yeah, but if they're watching it on the weekend, it's probably the best balance of that.
Well, and it's a survival thing for us because, again, the six-hour flight to New York every summer. We're going to Southern California this weekend, and I have got Toy Story 3 on DVD, and Beauty and the Beast, which my daughter has never seen. And I'm going to read on those flights.
Well, here's the other thing about if your kids are just – if that watching is confined to either special occasions or the weekend, it also means that you can elongate the period in which you are presenting them with classics they have not seen, such as Beauty and the Beast, where they haven't power-loaded the AFI's top 100 kids films by the time they're two.
My son, for his eighth birthday – is going to get to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, come on. That's so great.
Now,
in a weird way, you know, and again, I do not have kids because I think I would make a poor parent. But that's one of those things where you almost just want to be able to, like, beam yourself into the parent mode for just that day, just so you can watch that reaction somebody watch
I've
it the first
this,
time.
I've told you this, I'm sure. Really, the only reason I wanted to have children was so that I could introduce my children to Star Wars.
Yes, make them like the things you like.
And the day that my son first watched Star Wars, his life changed. You could just see his brain opening.
And also it worked out well for you because he watched it, he loved it, and it, as you said, it just made an impact on him. Because I live in fear that it's like I would have the kid, and I would, you know, and it's like I would try to introduce him to, like, you know, the one of the great films or a great novel, you know, a fantastic piece of writing, and he would just be like, all right, whatever, you know, and he would want to go watch like a calf roping instead or something.
You forget that these things when they're introduced to them for the first time, it is this brief shining moment in which you as the parent are the coolest human being on the planet.
Do you feel like if you imprint your kids early enough with things like, let's say, Star Wars or a particular book, that is more or less permanent? They may go through a phase of rejecting things when they're teenagers, but that if you imprint the love of a particular movie or type of art on them when they're a kid, that will always be there.
I think if it's something that the two of you share, probably, because it won't just be Star Wars. It'll be Star Wars, this thing that my mom and I talked about constantly.
So it's not just a great thing in and of itself, but it also is tied to like the powerful childhood memory.
And then it's also very disappointing when you try to introduce them to something and they're just like, no.
All right, I have to mention this, and we have to give our fourth clue for the week, and then we got to skedaddle here in a few because you've got an actual job, and also Dawn's going to move her car before the man comes and takes it away again. I myself have nothing to do, so I would gladly sit here until midnight like a social malform. But you know, what are you going to do? You mentioned something about Toy Story 3 that all the critics were just sitting there in a row just sobbing, which, by the way, thank you for telling me that. And I mean that in a serious way because I have to not have to steal myself. I have to sort of prepare myself for, you know, what Oprah calls the ugly cry, where you're just sort of blubbering at the end. Well, it's like, but I watched.
And it is one of those movies. I was sitting there in the theater. I've got Eric Snyder on one side of me. Patrick is on the other side of me. On the other side of him, we've got like Mike Russell, David Walker's down the thing. I think, you know, Sean Levy's. We're all there. And I'm sitting there in the theater and, you know, the movie's rolling around and I start going, okay, oh yeah, there's where the manipulative sad stuff's going to go. Okay, not going to affect me. Not going to do it. And I just like, I feel myself welling up. I'm like, I can't do this. I cannot do this. I am in a theater full of my colleagues. Yeah. I can't. And so I reach up and I'm kind of wiping it away. And then I hear Eric Snyder next to me just go, and then that's when I kind of peek a little bit down and I see like everybody, all of us are just weeping like little girls.
This is the beauty of 3D, that you have the glasses.
Yeah.
the sequence in Up where just the sets of music, the no words, just their love story. I mean, just sobbing. At that. And 3D glasses.
And you can, no, it's a photorefractive reaction to the light. You say that, and it's like I made no secret of the fact that I am basically just a 9-year-old in some ways when it comes to reactions like that movies. I was talking about just sitting there. I went on this date with a girl years and years and years ago to Bridges of Madison County, where she was fine and I was just blubbering like a baby at the end of it, just like a tool.
I talked about that. Patrick and I had only been seeing each other for, I think, a brief while, like a couple of months or something, and we went to see The Iron Giant.
I was just about to go to The Iron Giant.
And we saw it at like Century Eastport or something, where you can put the arm up, and of course, you know, we're still in date mode, so he's got his arm around me and I'm sort of nestled up against his shoulder, and I'm sitting here going, I can't know he's crying. He can't know I'm crying. And I'm like, you can't know I'm crying. And then I just hear him, like, just above my head, go, snorful, snorful. And I was like, okay, it's okay.
So that was actually going to be a question it's not like I'm one of those guys who, like, people can't see me cry or know I cry or whatever. It's like, you know, I don't mind. It doesn't matter to me. What are you going to do? So I have like no like embarrassment about that. But I will say that I made the one time when I actually did not go to something because of the crying that I knew would commence is when Court and Bobby did their public screening of The Iron Giant. Because it was like it was because here's the thing that will make guys cry. You know what makes guys cry? Two things. I mean, this is, you know, almost always if guys seeing their dad cry. You know, it's like you watch those like rehab shows or whatever where it's like and the dad is there, you know, and the dad starts crying and that's when the dude loses it. Seeing that or just like, you know, or if it's that shared like it is the shared communal cry where it's like the whole room of guys crying. And at Iron Giant, I can't even make it through the opening credits of that movie without crying. No lie. Laura and I will watch that like once a year. And seriously, it's just as soon as the opening credits, I just start to blubber like a child. I mean, there's just no getting – I cannot stop it. It is just – and I've seen it 15 times. And it's like I don't even get 5 or 6 minutes in, and I just start – and I start crying uncontrollably. So – but I mean –
oh, God. He's a beatnik.
It's just
he works in a car
lot. It's like the greatest movie, but it does just wreck you at a certain point. So I wondered if your son had seen it, and if you had any qualms about it.
Too young to cry.
Is it?
Yeah. He doesn't do that yet.
So has he? So is he? But has he seen the? Yes. Did he love it?
I don't think it's up in the pantheon for him.
Really?
Yeah.
That does surprise me because I think a lot of people view that as a movie that instantly went to the top of the list.
Oh, he's 8, so I think he's probably...
Maybe the underlying some of the themes are not quite...
I think it's a little too subtle for him at this point.
I keep saying, you know, if they would just re-release that in the theaters. I mean, it's just printing money. I mean, it's just minting money right there.
This was, by the way, a really good year for animated films, by the way, because Disney brought out Tangled, which was much better than I thought it was going to be. Despicable Me, which was also really good.
And then Megamind, you said, was...
Megamind was good.
Was actually good.
Toy Story 3, just phenomenal. One of the best movies of the year. So, yeah, no, it was a great year for animated films.
I was just happy I got out of seating Yogi Bear.
That
was...
Oh, God. Has that already come and gone?
Oh, yeah.
What about that Smurfs thing? Is that still on the way?
This summer.
We have that to look forward to still?
I don't know. And then this weekend I get to go see that that movie about the garden gnomes.
Oh, my God. Remind me tomorrow. Okay, hold on a second. No, you just reminded me of something. There is the greatest film... coming to Portland. I was talking to our friend Siegfried about this yesterday.
Okay.
Talk to you about it tomorrow. It's the greatest, I swear to God, and this is not hyperbole, it's like the greatest trailer I've seen in months for what could be, if it's handled correctly, and the advance word is very strong, could be just one of the most genius movies in some years. It's just, I was not prepared for what I saw yesterday, I'll put it that way. As we wrap this up, it is time for your fourth clue. This is your Thursday clue for the EH Vending Name That Snack Contest. Again, we are giving you one clue every day. And when Friday comes, that is tomorrow, when Friday's clue is given, if you are the first person to correctly identify the snack via snack@rickemerson.com, you will win a heaping helping of consumable delectables from EH Vending. Find out more about them at ehvending.com or call 360-816-1853. If you own a business, if you manage a business, if you are the guy who calls the shots, if you are an employee who just... if you find that you're just working in some sort of, I don't know, some sort of excruciating hell of a business because, you know, about 1 o'clock every day you want Twizzlers and there are no Twizzlers to be had and the nearest, like, 7-Eleven is, like, 9 miles that way and it's like you don't have the car because your, you know, husband was running from the law and he ran over one of those tack strips and then the tack strips caused the tires to tear out and then one of the tires went up into the wheel well and then it caused the fuel line to be severed and then you realized, oh, my God, that's the only car we have and it's going to take forever for him to rob enough banks for us to get another car and then I got to bail him out of jail before we do anything and so I don't have the, you know, the ability to go to the 7-Eleven to get Twizzlers, and it's keeping you from completing actuarial table work, you can solve that by contacting EH Vending. And it's ehvending.com or 360-816-1853, or you call James at 503-897-8204. And, of course, they are longtime listeners of the program, 13 years listeners. So they are part of the extended Rick Emerson family and good folk. So please contact them, and they can have, with a traditional snack and soda machine, it's your coffee service, whatever, they get taken care of. Please tell them you heard it here, ehvending.com. 360-816-1853. Today's snack clue. So this is clue the fourth. It'll be followed by tomorrow's clue, at which point you can contribute your guess to snack at rickemerson.com. Today's clue is snap. There you go. That is today's clue. Snap.
What?
The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. We want to thank our guests, including Ms. Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. Read her thrice weekly in The Oregonian, or read her online at OregonLive.com. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the life and career of Mr. Flip Wilson. After a brief musical interlude, we will have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you for your support. It is Thursday, February 3rd, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you tomorrow. Bye now.